Hey, it's John Canzano. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. And thanks to all the listeners and all of our sponsors who help make the Bald-Faced Truth the number one sports radio show in Portland. Enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. John Canzano.
People don't like to hear the truth all the time. You know, people ask you questions, but they don't actually necessarily want to hear the answers.
Love it.
I mean, I like the guy. I listen to him every day.
Canzano, what's going on, man?
He's dead sexy.
I think he does a damn good job.
I'm going to be rooting for this young Portland team, which, you know, is a terrific team. You guys just have a terrific nucleus.
You pay attention to detail. That's why you're so successful.
I just think he's honest. Yeah. Straightforward and to the point.
You're bringing up something that's probably the average sports fan watching the game didn't pick up on.
I'm really glad to see that someone who speaks their mind is not afraid to tell it how it is.
He's a smart guy. That's my dude, man. Yeah, yeah, I know him, man. I let my mother listen to him.
Hate him.
You don't want to get nobody a second chance. Trump.
To represent that as some sort of subterfuge by John Canzano, I would have expected far better.
He just sounds like an egotistical idiot.
He was rude, crude, and wrong.
Love to hate it.
Yo, John, I can't stand you. I can't stand you, but I come back every day to listen to the show.
Bald-faced truth teller.
Who is he to judge?
Well, he can raise your eyebrows a lot.
I was angry. He just got my feathers that day big time.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth, brought to you by High Caliber Millwrights. In need of getting your plant or machinery job done right the first time and on time? Then call High Caliber today.
Lillard pulls back against Dragic around a Nurkic pick. Double clutches with a three out front. It's in, and he's fouled! Lillard felt the contact, put the ball up to the rim. He scores. He has now hit a three-pointer in 49 consecutive games, and he'll have a chance at a four-point play. Lillard throws a pass to Nurkic. He pulls it over, jams it, and it's fouled! Great pass from Lillard, who has his double-double, and Nurkic a chance at a three-point play. Pressure, Blazers break it. Lillard has it, spins forecourt, makes a move now to Collins. Collins, 3 seconds, a fadeaway three from the near corner is in! With 0.8 left in the period!
Blazers have 10 in a row. How else can I start this show? You win 10 games in a row, you're getting the front stage platform. You get out of the gates first, and we put you on this show first. We have a great show for you. We're going to talk basketball on today's show in a variety of different ways, from Sports Illustrated to documentaries. We've got a ticket giveaway on today's show as well. And I want to take a lot of phone calls, get a lot of feedback from you, especially if you are somebody interested in this NBA season. This show is going to be for you. I want to know, though, out of the gates, the Blazers have won 10 straight. I didn't think that that would be a thing that happened. And I know that we want to give a lot of credit to Damian Lillard. But am I a bad sports commentator for taking Lillard for granted? And what I mean by that is I sort of expect him to be really good on a night-to-night basis and great offensively in particular. But as I look around the NBA and ask people who know NBA basketball better than I do, and I'm talking about people who are employed in the industry, who work in the league, front office people, scouts who work in the NBA, I say, what is going on with the Blazers that wasn't happening in the early part of the season? They all say the same thing. And it's not Damian Lillard. They don't even talk about Zach Collins. They're not talking about Yusuf Nurkic or CJ McCollum. You know what they talk about? They talk about the defensive dimension that the Blazers have developed in this run. I want to give credit today because we talk a lot about the lack of defense that this team plays. You got to give Terry Stotts and the entire Blazers roster credit for playing better team defense in this 10-game stretch. It would be the same as us looking at a successful business and not recognizing that the core values of that business are more important probably than anything that they're selling. For example, you can go into a restaurant. You know if the restaurant's run well and managed well, that you've got good employees, it's a clean restaurant, it looks inviting, it's warm, things run smoothly. You know that. It doesn't have that much to do with the food, does it? Ultimately, it's food that you talk about. But with the Blazers, while we talk about offensive basketball, and while we talk about a team that has won 10 straight, the truth is that we are talking about an entity that is playing better team defense, has been more entertaining, and seemingly seems to run into teams on a night-to-night basis that are without their star players. Hey, by no fault of their own, they're lining up victories. And when you win 10 straight, you get credit on this show. The Blazers are the most relevant thing going on in our state in sports. But I want you to tell me what you think the reason is that they have won 10 straight. What is that single factor that is at the top of the list, at front of the list? When I talk to scouts, they say, hey, it's better team defense. But are we guilty then of diminishing what Damian Lillard has done? Are we guilty of diminishing the value of Zach Collins and the emergence that he's had in this run? Yusuf Nurkic having a very good night, raising a lot of questions. Should this team be built around Nurkic? Should it be handed to Collins? What's the Blazers' plan? Can they keep both of those guys? A lot of fans bantering about that stuff on social media. But I want you to tell me what you think the single most important factor has been for the Blazers turning the corner, winning 10 straight, because that is not an accident. 503-417-7575 is the number statewide. You can call in whether you're listening in Eugene on Fox Sports Eugene, Core 1050 AM, 95.7 FM, or in Klamath Falls on 93.3, the ESPN affiliate there, or in Portland on the Powerhouse 102.9 FM and 750 AM, The Game. Wherever you may be, I want to know what it is that you think the Blazers are doing. We'll get to other things on today's show. We'll talk some March Madness. We sent Chop, our street correspondent, out on the streets to gather some intel on March Madness that may help you with your bracket or it may just make you laugh. But before we get to that, I want to talk about the Blazers. I think they deserve the platform. We're not giving them an hour today like we gave them last Friday. We're not going to give them 2 hours, but we're going to give them this segment of radio, and I want to hear from you on that front. Because when I look at what the Blazers are doing, I want to go to the things that are glaring and obvious, which is Yusuf Nurkic has been very good. Zach Collins has emerged. Damian Lillard has been just an absolute powerhouse and named Western Conference Player of the Week for scoring 35 a game. Blazers have been on fire. I mean, it's been NBA Jams-like, and they've been fun, which is beyond other like on a lot of nights in other years, you could have tuned out in March and said, I'll just catch them when they're in the playoffs. But if you're tuning out right now on the Blazers, you're missing what is the most interesting and exciting story that comes in front of the biggest sports day in the country on Thursday. That national holiday that is the NCAA tournament that starts on Thursday. So give me that one thing that you think is most responsible for the Blazers coming forward and breaking out at 503-417-7575. We sent Chop on the streets, and I don't know if I should play this right now or if I should hold on to it. I'm a little scared of what people on the streets said when Chop asked them about the NCAA tournament. I think I'll play that coming up here in just a few minutes, but I'm told it's funny. Later in the show, we're going to talk to Jeremy Wu, who covers basketball for Sports Illustrated, the crossover. We've got some Mariners tickets to give away because baseball season is coming. We'll talk a little bit of baseball on the show, including baseball as it pertains to the Portland market. But before we get to that, don't we have to start today's show with the Trailblazers? Let's go out to Mark, the New York mailman, who is joining us. Mark, what's up?
Hey, John, how you doing?
I'm good.
Okay, great. Thanks for taking a call, obviously. But anyway, I want to talk about the Blazers. I mean, the big change is the All-Star break definitely helped. And I think it's a big thing about confidence. I think Stotts is finally starting to get it as far as building confidence in players. And if you're doing well out there, you're going to get more time. You mentioned Zach Collins and guys like Connaughton and Harkless, the way he came back. But the intensity, I noticed they picked up the intensity. Anybody can play defense. It's all about desire and will, you know, and hustle. So the team is definitely, they came out of the gate after the All-Star break, and they're really hustling, and it's infectious. And they're going to the basket more. Even Lillard is not just relying on the outside shot. And McCollum, too, they're driving more. It's an energy thing, too. You know, the rest of the All-Star break definitely helped the team.
They definitely.
They're infectious, man. They're hustling.
You know what, Mark?
Happen, man, when everybody hustles.
Mark, when you have a team that is getting a result, that is hustling. And I think it's a big part of playing defense. Everybody always talks about, why can't you be a better defender? Some of defense is understanding defensive concepts. It is. If you don't understand team defense, you're going to have a hard time playing defense in the NBA or in college basketball or in high school basketball or at a 24-hour fitness, for crying out loud. But if you can understand team defense and you put some effort behind that, that's when you start to have a player or a team that starts to say, hey, they play a little bit of defense. But what the difference for this Blazers team is, they're getting a result, you know, in putting in the effort. And I feel like in the early part of this win streak, they had some really good defensive quarters where you're now seeing them start to put together runs where, like, for a quarter or a 5-minute stretch at the end of a quarter in particular, they've been remarkable at the end of quarters, especially like first quarter, second quarter. You'll see them locked up neck and neck in a tie game with about 5 minutes to go or 4 minutes to go, and all of a sudden they go on a 7-0 run or a 9-0 run or a 9-2 run to finish a quarter. That is rooted firmly in defense. And I feel like they're getting a result, and they're getting rewarded for playing team defense. And as a result, they're starting to go, hey, we're not a bad defensive team. 503-417-7575 is the number. David's in Astoria. David, what do you credit the win streak to?
Well, dang you, Don. You just said everything I was going to say. I don't know that much about the X's and O's, but it seems to me that the coaches have schemed in such a way as to minimize the defensive liabilities at the guard spot. And that, I think, inspired some success, like you said. And that success is energizing. And it's driven more offense. It's driven everything, I think.
Yeah, look, in the fourth quarter of games, Josh on Twitter is saying, look, he thinks the single most important factor is that the Blazers are winning the fourth quarter. 10-game win streak. They're winning the fourth quarter by an average of 7 points. They're taking the lead. They're keeping the lead. They're finishing. But yeah, is that because of offense, defense, coaching? Also on Twitter, Cycle says, John, I think Terry Stotts has been coaching better lately than Lillard's been playing. That's big praise. I am also impressed with the job that Terry Stotts has done. Brad is in Eugene. Brad.
Hey there. It comes down to chemistry. This team has had some time to develop and learn to play with each other. And one of the prime examples of chemistry is Zach Collins being taken under Ed Davis's wing. He's kind of like Ed Davis's apprentice. The chemistry that those two exhibit when they're playing on the floor together is infectious, the energy they bring, and just in general, that the team is playing better team defense because of their chemistry. They're playing as a team. Even when Lillard is going off scoring, it's like they're all happy to be in their roles and be part of that overall chemistry that's really taken off, and it's fun to see.
You hit on something there, and it's said all the time in sports, and Pat Casey at Oregon State in baseball, who does a great job coaching that program, says confidence is comfort, comfort is confidence, and you talk about energy and chemistry, and again, we're talking about non-basketball-related things. Like, you could have good chemistry in your household. You could have good chemistry in your cubicle at work or with your boss or with your coworkers. You don't need to be a sports person to understand what good chemistry is. That's why I think sports is so relatable to people. And Brad and Eugene hits on it directly there. Is it chemistry? Is that it? Are there myths that are floating around out there as well? Does it have anything to do with the fact that teams are tanking? Does it have anything to do with the fact that the Blazers are trying to win while some aren't? You tell me what you see. The Blazers are on a 10-game winning streak. 503-417-7575.
This is the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano, brought to you by High Caliber Millwrights.
Kirk Cousins, former Washington Redskins quarterback, plans to sign a 3-year, fully guaranteed $84 million contract with the Minnesota Vikings. That per ESPN. Landmark deal. Highest paid quarterback in the league, Kirk Cousins. That deal goes through. Is that insane to you? Like, I don't get it. I don't. Like, I've never said of Kirk Cousins, I've got to have that guy. you're an NFL team, it just shows you how out of whack things are. And it just shows you, too, that there is a recognition in the league as you look around and you see Carson Wentz go down and you see Nick Foles come up. I think there's a recognition in the league that you've got to have a competent guy at that position that is at least a B-minus at that position. Because Kirk Cousins has got B-minus written all over him. Let's talk Blazers, though. 503-417-7575. What's the single biggest factor right now for the Blazers' 10-game win streak? And how long will it go, by the way? As I look at their schedule, and you know it gets tougher, but how much longer can the Blazers continue to win? When does this thing end? Can you take a look at their schedule as well and tell me when you think the fun ends? And by the fun, I mean this win streak. Because I look at their season and I go, look, okay, they got Cleveland on Thursday night at home, then Detroit, then at the Clippers in a back-to-back Saturday-Sunday. Do they get by Cleveland, or is that the end of it? Do they get through the Detroit game on Saturday at home, or is it the back-to-back at L.A.? Tuesday, home against Houston. Friday, home against Boston next week. Sunday at Oklahoma City. Where does it end for the Blazers? 503-417-7575. Steve's in Beaverton. Steve, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hello, John. I just, I agree that team defense is happening, but I'd like to give a shout out to Ed Davis. I think he's the guy that holds that second unit together, and then he carries it on into the first. I see him giving all out effort every night. He never takes a playoff. He's always battling, and I see him coaching other players, helping other players, and talking to them and communicating with them, especially Zach. I think he's one of the guys that's helping Zach most than anybody out there on the court.
Yeah, I think, you know, part of Zach Collins' success rides with the fact that the guy is an absolute, at 7'1", is a walking mismatch with a guy who can shoot a little bit from the outside. I saw it in the Final Four, even with Gonzaga bringing him off the bench, even with the guy in foul trouble in the semifinal. He was a factor in that game, and he was probably the single biggest reason that Gonzaga didn't advance to the national championship game. It was that he got in foul trouble, and that was problematic for him. Zach Collins has been a nice development. I don't know if he's going to end up being the player that the Blazers hope and think that he's going to be, but when they picked Zach Collins, when Neil Olshey, the GM of the Blazers, selected him, I wrote a column saying, I like the pick. I like this guy. That they might have drafted the best player in the draft. It was a speculative pick because you were getting a guy with 1 year of college experience. It was a speculative pick because you were getting a guy who wasn't ready in training camp to come in and contribute right away. But Collins has been good. And Ed Davis has been an absolute animal. And he was never more evident than in the Warriors' victory on Friday night, where Ed Davis, as a rebounder, was a difference maker in that game. 503-417-7575 is the number. I've got Chop on the streets of Portland asking people about the NCAA tournament. We'll play that. Our street correspondent Chop took a trip out of the building. We'll play that on today's show as well. I'll play that coming up here in a couple minutes. James is in Portland. James, what's on your mind?
I agree with what everybody's saying, but the question is, what is the single biggest factor?
Yeah.
I don't see how you could not say Damian Lillard, because multiple of these games, they are down by double digits going into the fourth quarter or late in the third quarter. And as I drive every night and I listen to the games, I drive for my job, and it just seems like that is the single biggest factor, is Damian Lillard's play in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to get over.
James, double digit.
James, it's kind of hard to ignore the fact that he's shiny and flashy, and he's the guy scoring out front. Like, without him, you're right, they're dead in the water right now.
Yeah. I mean, everything else everybody's saying is true. The defense, the rebounds, Ed Davis's play is exciting and everything else like that, but, you know, you got to say Damian Lillard.
I think Lillard having 10 assists last night was the thing that I was most impressed with. His 32 points, I've come to take that for granted. I mean, last week he averaged 34.7. So he scores 32, and I'm like, not his best night. But it was the 10 assists, and mostly Nurkic on the assist that I really went, you know, he's now starting to spread the ball around. But am I a bad radio show host for saying, look, I kind of expect Lillard, who's had 39 and 37 and 35 and 40 in this run, I kind of expect Lillard to come out and score. You know, and I kind of expect him to do his thing. They beat Golden State twice in the stretch, both times at home. They beat the Knicks, who were terrible. They won at the Lakers. They beat Oklahoma City and Minnesota and Sacramento at home. They won at Phoenix. They even won at Utah, a 19-point win. So I'm not going to say that the schedule is the single biggest factor that they've won 10 straight, because you don't give me the Warriors twice, and I don't care what happened. You put them on the schedule, that's something to deal with. You don't give me Oklahoma City, Minnesota, and at Utah, and tell me that it's the schedule that's friendly. Let's go to Mondo in Happy Valley. Mondo, welcome back.
Hey, how's it going?
Going all right.
Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I must agree with everybody who has called. The chemistry, how they're communicating, how Ed Davis has been playing. But I must agree with the previous caller, that Lillard. Lillard has been the main factor to get the Blazers going on this winning streak.
Let me ask you this, Mondo, because this has been weighing on me. All right, he's been great in the last 10 games. He was exceptional last week. Best average in the league over the last week. Where was that in the early part of the season, you think?
Well, I must say, after I know he was gone for like 6 games or 5 games around November, I think, and once he came back and got in rhythm, he's just been on fire. That's what I have seen, because I haven't missed a game since November. And I've been seeing Lillard just motivating his team. If he doesn't play well, he helps others play well. So in a way, he's helping the team.
Maybe it's you, though, because, you know, that's about when the winning started, when you started watching regularly.
I must say I've been obsessed since I've been watching the Blazers have been winning.
Yeah.
So to you answer your other question, how long will they last? I must say till Boston. I think Boston, they might have some trouble. I think Rockets, they got a good team, but I think the way Blazers have been playing, how we got a young team and everybody just wants to play, like you can see it. They want to play.
I'm a little worried about Cleveland. Like, anytime you have LeBron to deal with, isn't that a factor? I'm a little worried about Cleveland on Thursday. Because I look at Detroit on Saturday, that's a win, right? I think they're still better than Detroit. But Cleveland on Thursday, and then they go on the road at the Clippers on Sunday in a back-to-back, and I'm a little worried about that one. He says Boston, but by the way, they play Houston on Tuesday. And I love the stretch of Sunday, Tuesday, Friday of this weekend and into next week. NBA TV on Sunday, Tuesday on TNT, Friday on NBA TV, and you have of the Blazers next, what, 7? You have 5 of 7 there in that streak that you'll be able to watch, including an ESPN game. Chad's in Beaverton. Chad, what's on your mind?
Hey, love your show, John.
Thank you.
The Blazer fan in me does not want to see the streak come to an end, but I think realistically it's probably the back-to-back. Those are tough. And I think you just made the point a minute ago, the difference in this team isn't really, to me, a person. It's they're winning games that they should win. They're not losing those games that you shouldn't lose.
Yeah, isn't that so important? Like, if you are a decent team in this league, it almost comes down to a discipline that the teams that are winners have, in that you're going to play against Miami in a game last night that was a little more difficult than maybe I anticipated. Like, it was a little more, you know, I thought this was a win going away, and all of a sudden I was looking up going, is the streak going to end here against Miami at home? Come on. Like, we can live with Cleveland. You can live with a road game or Houston or Boston. But Miami at home with no Hassan Whiteside, no Dwayne Wade? Mike's in Portland. Mike, what's on your mind?
So, John, man, I just want to straighten these young guys out, man.
Straighten them out, Mike.
They keep throwing out chemistry. Chemistry is not an ingredient for winning. If you go to the Bible. The Bible tells you what it takes to win. It says the race don't always go to the swiftest or the strongest, but to the one that endure. So endurance is the main ingredient for a winner. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. I didn't hang up on you. But don't you think, Mike, like, I don't know if you've ever been in a relationship or if you have had a relationship with a woman or a friend, or you have good chemistry in a friendship. You have good chemistry there. That matters, doesn't it?
I'm sure it plays a part, but it ain't the greatest thing for determining who wins. Hey, look, when the tortoise beat the rabbit, chemistry had nothing to do with that. It was endurance. And so what are you trying to tell me if chemistry was so important, then how come the Blazers haven't had chemistry in 40 years? I don't believe that. I'm sure they've had chemistry. But what they have lacked is they didn't have the endurance. So it doesn't matter. The most important thing in winning is not how you start, it's how you finish. And so if the Blazers can go in the championship, then I will believe this. But up until I see that, I'm going to treat this like a rumor. I'm not going to believe you.
Mike has heard a rumor. The single greatest factor for winning, is he right that it has nothing to do with chemistry? Let's not talk about the Blazers. Let's just talk about the great sports teams in history. What do they have that the losers don't have? 503-417-7575. Tell me what the Patriots have that others don't. Tell me what the Eagles captured this last season that nobody else had. Tell me what makes great winners win.
John Canzano, the bald-faced truth. Brought to you by High Caliber Millwrights.
I have a fascination with the weird and the unusual. Like the P.T. Barnum movie that's out, The Greatest Showman. I love that movie because while it's not historically accurate, it still gives you a behind the scenes on theater of the absurd. And along those lines, a story on OregonLive.com in The Oregonian today caught my eye. Apparently, Charles Manson, as you all know, died. But apparently his body has been on ice. He died in November. And it's not like a Ted Williams ice situation. You know, they took Ted Williams and they froze his head. Remember the splendid popsicle, and his family was all upset. You know, some of his family wanted him buried. Other people wanted him preserved. And by the way, for the record, I do not want to be preserved. If any of my family members are listening, I don't need it. I don't want my body put in a freezer somewhere. I just think that is a horrifying thought to me, to be on ice. But Charles Manson's remains, which have been on ice in Bakersfield since November, have been the subject of a court battle. Anybody aware of this? He died in the hospital in Bakersfield while serving a life sentence. He was 83. The fight over his corpse has been a circus. He's got friends filing competing wills that were purportedly signed by him. His kin have come out of the woodwork to stake a claim to his body. Apparently, the estate includes rights to songs that he wrote. And also, his estate allows for the licensing of his image. So they're fighting over whether or not, you know, who gets the rights to this. It's a case in Kern County. In California, it was a three-way fight. It was between his grandson, also another man. His grandson, by the way, is named Jason Freeman. Another person who said he was fathered by Manson, named Michael Brunner, and a pen pal of Manson's from his time in prison, named Michael Channels. Now, Channels sold Manson memorabilia. He says he's got his will, like Charles Manson's will. All three are in, in this fight. It's a three-way fight. And basically, there was no... And the funny thing is that the grandson, he just wants to cremate the body. He's not trying to get, like, rights to the songs. He doesn't want to, like, exploit it. He just says he wanted to take his ashes out into the desert and dump them. And this is weird. It's a weird story. And the weirdest part of it of all is the fact that there was a claim from another son who claims he was fathered during an orgy that has also entered the fray late. Like, it only in the theater of the absurd with Charles Manson, and Gliss is finding a tremendous joy with that last statement. I don't know how he's going to say that on air. He was fathered during a party?
No, I think that was probably the best way to describe it.
Climbing all over each other? Whatever.
It just caught me off guard, that's all.
What should happen here? Like, I kind of feel like the decent thing to do is cremate the guy and forget him.
That seems like it makes the most sense. Just get it over with, and that way there's no fighting, infighting, anything like that. Just take care of it.
Why not just cremate the body? Because all the parties agree that it should be cremated, but there's just a fight over what should happen to the ashes. Like, one, the son says he wants to scatter them in the desert. The others, I don't know what they're going to do, sell them. But it's, why shouldn't the court just order that he's cremated? Like, why keep him on ice? That's the weird part, too.
Yeah, that's kind of weird, especially since it's been so long. And if everybody wants them cremated, why can't they just divide the ashes somehow?
One of the people involved is apparently offering to sell photos of the dead body. That's why. Okay. There's not a public benefit here, but it's just one of those weird stories where it catches my eye. Speaking of which, our man on the street, Chop, was on the street asking people about the NCAA tournament. We've got March Madness going on this month. We're going to talk some college basketball in today's show, but I thought we could take you along for the ride by going to the streets.
I'm Chop from 102.9 750 The Game Sports Radio Station. Who are you guys?
I'm Kira.
Kira?
Shaniqua.
Shaniqua, all right. Are you guys from Portland? Where are you guys from?
We are.
Portland?
Yep.
Twins?
Yep.
March Madness is here. College basketball, arguably the craziest, most insane time for sports. You guys college basketball fans?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Definitely.
All right, so brackets. It's all about brackets. Brackets, brackets, brackets. Do you guys fill out brackets?
No.
No?
Never.
If you were to watch a college basketball game, what would you two be looking at? Don't be shocked.
I don't know.
The sexy players.
Well, yes, I guess
that. The
sexy
players.
Yep.
Go Ducks, maybe?
Go Ducks, yes, right. Absolutely.
Ma'am, what's your name?
I'm Chloe.
Chloe, and this is Bridgetown Cafe, downtown Portland. Look, March Madness is crazy, arguably the most insane and cool sports spectacle in the history of mankind.
Mm-hmm.
Do you follow basketball at all? Are you a fan?
I am a fan, yeah. I'm also an ex-player. So.
What? Really?
Yeah.
Where'd you play?
At Lewis and Clark College in Portland.
What position?
A shooting guard.
Shooting guard, nice. What is that, the two?
Yes, that
all
is.
Right. Chloe, she was the two at Lewis and Clark. All right, so March Madness is here, and everybody gets bracket crazy.
Mm-hmm.
How do you fill your brackets out?
Lately, it's pretty random, because I have to be honest, I haven't been following collegiate basketball these days, which I'm a little ashamed of, but, you know. So I just go with the flow based on the rankings of the schools, you know.
But look, you don't really keep up, but you still do a bracket, right?
Yeah, with, like, my family and friends, you know, just fun and games, nothing serious.
So when you're filling them out randomly, do you ever go, like, by color or mascot?
Huh. Maybe subconsciously, yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if I'm fully aware that I do that, though. So maybe not, you know?
Maybe, maybe not. Now, is there a team that you're kind of rooting for?
I'm actually always rooting for Syracuse. My dad is from Syracuse, so.
All right.
Go Orange.
My name is Mark Tassi, a.k.a. Mark the New York Mailman.
All right, Mark, brackets are here. The madness is here, March Madness. How do you go about selecting your teams for your bracket?
I just wing it.
Just wing it. The science from Mark the Mailman. And ma'am, what's your name?
My name is Debbie Tassi.
And Debbie, how do you select your teams?
I actually go with more like picking a racehorse. I go for logos and mascots and that sort of thing.
Sir, what's your name?
My name is James.
James, do you have a science behind picking your brackets?
Yes, I do. It is get really drunk and circle the ones you can see.
I love that. And, sir, what's your name?
My name is Nate.
And do you have a method?
My method is to pick the opposite of what my heart tells me. So if it's Kentucky and some JC, I'll pick the JC because Kentucky is the obvious, and I do terrible every year.
Sir, what's your name?
My name's Kevin.
Kevin, March Madness is here. Are you ready for the sickness?
Yes, I am. It's the greatest sporting event ever, I think.
You got a team? You got a dog in the fight?
Well, no, I'm a Stanford fan from the Bay, but I'll go with Gonzaga since they're the best local team.
Everybody fills out a bracket. How many brackets do you fill out a season?
Just one, just for this.
Do you have a science, a method, a process to you filling out your
bracket? Well, I think the Big East is the best team, so I usually go with lean towards you, North Carolina and Duke.
North Carolina.
I think it's coming from over there.
What about cheerleaders or mascots or colors?
I'm a Stanford fan, man. I bleed Stanford red.
All right, I can't get you 4 minutes back of your life there, but there is bad advice for your bracket from people on the street. Don't follow any of it. Up next, we go behind the scenes with Kentucky basketball, really inside the madness. Leave it here.
More John Canzano with the bald-faced truth, brought to you by High Caliber Millwrights.
Our next guest, executive producer, co-creator of Inside the Madness, a look behind Kentucky basketball. A look behind the curtain. Jason Shavico is our guest, and you may have seen Two-A-Days on MTV, also the responsible party there joining us. What is it about getting behind the locker room door in sports that intrigues people?
First, thanks, John, for having me. I've just always loved telling sports stories. I think in reality TV, if you will, this is the ultimate reality because there's no faking it. You know, there's a game, you win or you lose, you got to prepare for it. And the emotions and the things around it are just real and raw. And I love being able to tell those stories.
I work as a newspaper columnist at the Oregonian. I host this show. I do some TV. And it's interesting to me in a sports setting, whenever a camera shows up, I think the big challenge is to try to get authenticity. How do you do that when you're bringing cameras with you to get Coach Calipari in Kentucky? How do you get them to relax?
So it's a good question, and over 15 years of doing these kinds of series, you know, we learn a lot. We learn every year kind of way to do things and adjust and do things better, but ultimately it's shooting 24/7, believe it or not, and it's with the same crew. So what we do is we fly in our crew. They do all these kinds of shows. We fly them into the city. We set them up to live there, and they spend 7 days a week with this team, and they truly become part of the staff and part of the team, and I would say after about a week to 10 days, things really just become part of the normal for these teams. And coach is used to seeing me and the certain camera guy and the audio guy. I mean, we literally run a mic on coach every single day since the beginning of the season. So I think just consistency leads to that comfortness, right? When you kind of feel comfortable around something, you tend to be more genuine.
I sat on press row during one NCAA tournament just a few feet from the Kentucky bench, and John Calipari was one of the most interesting people to listen to because he had this running dialogue that was going on sort of during the game where he's talking to himself, talking to no one in particular out loud. Were you able to capture some of that?
Oh, not some, all of it. We have a mic for every game, every practice. So sometimes I go to sleep at night after doing this for 4 months and I hear Coach Cal yelling in my head. It just has become part of the normal. But he's an interesting character, as you said. Watching him during the games is fascinating to me. He sees some things that you're just like, oh, wow, I didn't even realize that. So he's definitely an interesting character to be able to follow.
Inside the Madness, a look behind Kentucky basketball is the name of the piece. We're talking to the executive producer and co-creator, Jason Shavico. This will be produced or was produced for Facebook Watch. How is that different for you than other projects?
So Facebook Watch is a new platform, like you said, on Facebook, and it gives the viewers, you know, the opportunity to have very high-end content with very high-profile teams and things like that at their fingertips whenever they want, how they want. They want to watch it on their phone, no problem. You just go on Facebook, type in Inside the Madness like you would almost search for a friend, and the show page comes up, and you can watch all the episodes at once that are out by that time, one at a time. And the cool thing for us as producers, sometimes with, you know, television, doing these shows for a long time for TV, you have to hit a certain time. And as a producer, sometimes your shows can run longer because you want to tell a better story. Sometimes you want them to be a little shorter. Well, Facebook gives us the opportunity to tell the best story every single week. Time doesn't matter. If it's 18 minutes, great. If it's 40 minutes, great. They don't care. We just deliver to them an episode throughout the year.
Jason, you guys were there when Coach Calipari and his staff learned about the FBI probe into college basketball recruiting. That's a pretty cool moment to capture. What was that like?
Yeah, so we actually have robotic cameras inside of Coach Cal's office with microphones. So we have cameras and audio in his office 24/7. People have asked me this all the time. He never shut us down. He never told us to back off. He had phone calls. He had meetings, you know, about it, about the whole time. And he was transparent. I think he's very confident and comfortable with what they did and the position that he's in. And from what he knows, he's very comfortable with that situation.
How do you know, we were talking earlier in the show about chemistry on teams, and some of the callers believe that chemistry was the most important thing in a winning culture. Others said, well, if you've got talent, the chemistry will come. You're around a Kentucky team that is constantly having to reinvent and find that chemistry because of all the young players that are coming through that program, talented players. What did you see in covering this team for the season?
I follow college basketball a lot. I'm a huge college sports fan in general. And what I can tell you is, you know, taking these 17 to 18 year old kids, even though they were, you know, seven McDonald's All-Americans, it took a lot more than just talent, and it takes more than just chemistry. And I think Cal is almost that kind of piece in the middle that is needed. What he was able to do with these kids when they came in, they were so young. They almost looked like 16 year old kids. And I think part of them just expected, because they were going to play for Kentucky and Coach Cal, they could just show up and they were just going to win because they were Kentucky. And then they get punched in the mouth throughout the season. They kind of get startled and realize they got to learn how to trust each other and play together as a team. And Coach Cal will probably kill me for saying this, but I think the four-game losing streak was one of the best things that could have happened to these kids because of how young they were and how much they were struggling to play as a team. When they lost those four games, that building was unlike anything I've ever seen. They literally circled the wagons, blocked everything out, and just made it about them. And they, Coach Cal said, look, we're the only ones that care about each other as much as we do, and we're the only ones that can change this thing. In this room, in this building, that's it. And he was able to do that. And I think for me personally, I feel like knowing Coach Cal some over the years and watching him, I think this may be one of the best coaching jobs he's ever done with as young of a team as he had.
Notre Dame and Florida State have also been programs that you have done projects on. Jimbo Fisher was at Florida State and Brian Kelly at Notre Dame at the time. How are those guys different or the same than Calipari? Because do you see common traits in those coaches?
I see a lot of common traits. I think especially of the three that you mentioned, and we've done a few others, there's a lot of similar kind of character traits, if you will. A lot of them have that kind of high sense of urgency, you know, has to happen now. They want you to play well under pressure. Most of those coaches, especially Jimbo and Cal, practice is worse than the games for these kids. If these kids can make it through practice, they're going to do well in the games because their practices are extremely, extremely hard. And they're, you know, they're very, very good at what they do. One of the things I was most surprised with Cal this year, being with him for four straight months, was how involved he is. He is involved in every single piece of that program and play. And he surrounded himself, too, with some phenomenal coaches, Kenny Payne and Tony Barbary and Joel Justice and, you know, people like that, that just make him able to do what he does is really impressive.
Did Worldwide West make an appearance at any point? William Wesley, I know he's friends with Kenny Payne and Coach Cal.
I have not seen him. I don't even know who he is.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen him at a practice. I've been to every practice. I've been to every game. He's not, you know, I couldn't even tell you what he looks like.
Yeah, he used to be in his inner circle, and then he's gone on, probably because he became an agent for the NBA. He probably can't be there anymore because of rules. But it's always interesting to see the people kind of around the program that are vested in kind of in the background of all the photographs. It's really interesting to me to see the dynamic of a major college sports program. Did you have fun doing it, or the process, is it because you're a creator? Is it a agonizing process because you got to leave something and you got to edit this thing, right?
Yeah. So we turn around and edit every single week as we're shooting.
Agonizing or joyful?
It's agonizing because we have so much really good content. We have to cut out so much. I mean, we shoot 7 days a week. We have multiple cameras, and then we got to window that down into, you know, the best 30 minutes roughly. So 18 to 30 minutes is usually our goal to get an episode. So it's hard sometimes to be able to narrow, you know, as much content as we have to try and keep the viewers engaged to the stories.
Jason, I really appreciate your time. I encourage people, check out Inside the Madness on Facebook Watch. Thanks, Jason. I appreciate you, man.
No problem. Thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
All right. Good stuff behind the scenes. Look, with the accessibility that you get with cameras, you get to see behind the scenes. But I got to tell you, it is a difficult thing whenever you bring a camera around, because people, when a camera's around, do what? They stop acting like they would be acting naturally. I'm really curious to see how much of that is evident in this series, or because if the cameras are around all the time, do they forget about it? He did great work on high school football with Two-A-Days, which shows an Alabama high school program. Leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth coming up next. Punch It Audio.
Something is about to happen.
BFT.
Now listen up, everyone.
Let's go. The bald-faced truth.
John Canzano.
I gotta say, I love him most of the time. I think he's right on.
He's okay.
John's great.
He's a little unusual.
Live every afternoon, 12 to 3 p.m.
I hate that guy because he just never knows what he's talking about.
I think he does a damn good job.
That's my dude, man. Yeah, y'all know him, man. I let my mother listen to him.
Now, from the Pac West Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth. Brought to you by High Caliber Millwrights. In need of getting your plant or machinery job done right the first time and on time? Then call High Caliber today.
Let's play Punch It Audio.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
Kevin Durant, look, I gotta play this. This was after Friday's game, but I gotta play this. Kevin Durant and a fan got into it on Friday's Blazers-Warriors game. And yesterday we talked about it just briefly, but you know what? I got to play the sound from Durant after the game. Durant was upset, and he was happy that the referees tossed the fan. Fan got ejected. Punch it.
I don't know. It just happened. You know, sometimes just shut up and watch the game, man. You know, you had nothing to do with what was going on the floor. Not important. You know, you're just a fan at the game. Watch the game and enjoy it, man. You want to get involved. These guys want to get involved, and you're sitting on the court side. Just enjoy the game, man. So, glad the ref got his ass.
Basically said, shut up and watch the game. Which isn't all that different than shut up and dribble. Which fans are pointing out. I don't know. On one hand, I'm not the guy who's sitting in that courtside seat heckling players. Like, I don't see it as my role if I'm sitting in that seat to have a personal interaction with the players. Nor, you know, I'm there to watch the game. I'm there to cheer for my team if I'm in that seat. On the other hand, if you're Kevin Durant, I think you've got to have thicker skin and put the rabbit ears away. And what I mean by that is, you need to play basketball. And it's your job to be professional and show poise. If the referee tossed the guy out, and Durant blew him a kiss after as he was leaving, the referee tossed the fan out, you know, that's the referee's role. I just don't think it's becoming for an NBA player who is largely supported by fans, his salary is supported by fans, to turn around and say, hey, you know what? You just shut up and cheer. Kirk Cousins headed to the Minnesota Vikings. Adam Schefter, ESPN, reporting Punch it.
The latest is that he is likely to sign with the Minnesota Vikings. I can tell you this, multiple teams all believe that he is going to wind up with the Vikings. He's going to visit the Vikings. It's his first visit. The other teams don't believe that there's any realistic hope of getting him at this point in time. So all that's left is to work out the contract. When this contract is done, it's going to be a three-year, fully guaranteed contract on Kirk Cousins. That'll be a landmark deal for Kirk Cousins at this point in time, but it'll be a fully guaranteed deal. It is likely to come in Minnesota. Kirk Cousins will become the highest paid quarterback in football, and it'll be a big deal.
Kirk Cousins, who had a quarterback rating of 93.9 last season, threw 13 interceptions, 27 touchdowns, completed about 64% of his passes, is now going to be the highest paid quarterback in the NFL. Are you kidding me? Like, Kirk Cousins? I'm not even talking about the $84 million. Like, if you have your choice of who should be the highest-paid quarterback in the NFL, you could make a case for Brady. You could make a case even for a guy like Dak Prescott, who's so important to the Dallas Cowboys. Russell Wilson in Seattle. I'm talking about players who are super critical to their teams. I'm not... Kirk Cousins is nowhere near that discussion for me. That's for me. The Rams have a new defensive back, Aqib Talib. Punch it.
I look at it like, man, my final chapter of my NFL career, man, that fourth quarter, man, what better place to do it in L.A., man, with that market, man, with Wade Phillips, with a young, energetic corner on the other side of me, man. Yeah, bring that youth back to me. A great quarterback, man, Todd Gurley. Man, it's a great situation, in my opinion, so I'm just glad it happened how it happened.
49ers tried to trade for him. And again, he brings to mind the kind of player that you love when he's on your side and you hate when he's on the other side. Is he dirty? Maybe. But not when he's on your side. Just plays hard. That's the difference, right? Venus and Serena Williams. Uh-oh, sister fight. Serena and Venus played each other. Venus won, so Venus goes first. Punch it.
You know, I always know that it's never over until it's over. And, you know, I'm just lucky that I've played more matches than her right now. Otherwise, yeah.
Indian Wells Masters. Venus in straight sets, 6-3, 6-4 over Serena. Serena, how's that going over? Punch it.
It's definitely not less disappointing. I wish it were, but it's not. But then again, I wish it wasn't, then I wouldn't be who I am. So, I just have a long way to go, and I'm looking forward to the journey.
I've got two sisters in my household, three sisters really, but two that are really close in age, about 22 months between them. You know, they're half Italian, half Chinese. We call them the Chitalians. The two Chitalians in our household have a lot of competition between them. And I've always cringed when I've heard of the Serena versus Venus battles as, oh, it's painful for them. Because across the decades, these sisters have played on four continents. They played in the finals of all four Grand Slam tournaments. They played in sunshine, they played under closed roofs, they played on grass, they played on red clay, they played on green clay, they played on hard courts. But I've never for one minute thought this is a painful thing in watching it. I've always thought that it must be really cool for two sisters at the height of their careers, at the top of their sport, to be able to mix it up in the way that Serena and Venus are mixing it up. Poignant, the New York Times said. Serena's now 36 years old and a new mom. Venus is 37 and a new aunt. And guess who was in a little better shape? The new aunt was. Because she's probably sleeping. And I just thought, this is a chance where Serena has dominated and dominated and dominated. Venus is going, let me get my turn. Serena's always been the spoiler. I think it's cool to see this, and congratulations to them. Enjoy it, because I think they'll miss it when they're done. Yusuf Nurkic and the Blazers. Big night. 10 straight. Punch it.
I just tried to make the right play in the right time, and we just definitely want to keep winning. And, you know, we're not thinking about winning straight, just game by game, and we have a good rhythm right now.
Good rhythm. You know, and look, if you are somebody who's wondering, what do the Blazers do with Zach Collins and Yusuf Nurkic? I got a different question for you. Where would the Blazers be without Zach Collins and Yusuf Nurkic? Because you have been here before where you didn't have any big men. Now you have two. And you've got Nurkic, who's playing this season for about $3 million and will be a restricted free agent at the end of this season. Of course, if you're the Trailblazers, you try to keep this guy. And of course, you know, by the way, by league standards, that $3 million, he is the 266th highest paid player in the NBA. And he's better if we're ranking the top players in the NBA. Is he a top 150 guy? Yes. 36th highest paid center. They're getting good value for Nurk. Blazers are on a roll. Chris Haynes of ESPN did a little special when he's talking about Dame and CJ surprising people. Listen to this.
What you guys have been doing right as of lately, I didn't anticipate you guys even being anywhere close.
What did you anticipate, Chris? While we're at it.
That's a great question.
The way you said that, just kind of I felt like I
didn't know. What else would we be keeping?
Oh, okay, that's awesome. All right, I was making sure. And I'm not in third place.
What did you anticipate, Chris?
I anticipated 7th, 8th seed. No way did I ever expect you guys to be at this point right now. When you hear other people doubt you, does that do something to you guys? Does that motivate, frustrate?
I wouldn't say it motivate or frustrate us. I think it's, that's just what it is. What we have accomplished so far, they don't look at it like it's fluke. It seems like they would rather address it later, like, all right, we'll see about it. But those other teams were expected to be where they are, so, they don't have to mention us.
I think the proof is in the pudding. This is my fifth year in the league, and this is going to be our fifth year making the playoffs. So that's one. Two is to continue to build on how we've been and how we've played the last 5 years. So getting more wins, getting 50 wins consistently, getting out of the first round, getting out of the second round. I think once you consistently do those things, then your perception changes a lot. You can argue all the things in the world, but you can't argue these wins and losses.
I like C.J. McCollum. I think he's always got something more to say than just the obvious. And he points out that a thing that I really believe in when it comes to success in teams. And we've talked about confidence and chemistry on today's show. But I do think you have to sniff around it a little bit. Like, I think you have to sniff around being in the playoffs and then winning a series. And that, because I think you have to know what it is. It's why teams bring in veteran players all the time. Why? Because Richard Sherman's been there before. That's why the 49ers want him in their defensive backfield. I do think there's something to that. I am surprised that they're sitting in the three spot. I'm not surprised that it's all bunched up, but I had them as a 7 or 8 as well. And I think that's realistic and rational. I'm still not convinced that they're going to finish better than about 6th in the West with their schedule. But I love that they're going out and proving people wrong. And I love, too, that Damian Lillard says, hey, you can believe that. We don't need you. That's nonsense. Damian Lillard's the first guy when you say, I don't believe, who's like, oh, yeah, let me show you. That's his whole brand. Weber State, oh, yeah, no scholarship, oh, yeah. Blazers, oh, I'm undersized, oh, yeah. I think I didn't make the All-Star game, oh, yeah. So I don't think that's really true. I don't think he's being authentic there. I think he cares very deeply about what people say. I think he's thin-skinned even to a point. I've said things on this show that have gotten under his skin. And other people in the market have as well. If you say he's not a great defender, he takes offense at it. You say he's not a superstar, he takes offense at it. That's his entire brand. I've been snubbed is the entire brand. We'll talk basketball with Sports Illustrated's Jeremy Wu next.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano, brought to you by High Caliber Millwrights.
Years ago, I used to cover college basketball. I covered Indiana basketball as a beat reporter. I covered Purdue basketball as a beat reporter. I covered Jerry Tarkanian. And I got a chance to see a lot of NCAA tournament games. And what you would get in watching the tournament was not just, hey, this is great, it's March Madness, but you would get some real insight into what NBA scouts were looking at, because you could see the best college players in the country playing against other best college players in the country, and you got to see them over multiple nights and multiple games. Jeremy Wu is with us next. He covers basketball for Sports Illustrated and The Crossover, joining us. Jeremy, how are you, man?
Doing good, man. Just, you know, looking forward to these games tonight, and it's going to be a pretty busy week, I think.
Do you count the play-in games as part of the tournament, or are you a purist that says when it gets to 64, that's the tournament?
I think you got to count it. I mean, the stakes feel a little bit less high, I guess, because it's probably just because, you know, for all intents and purposes, most people filling out brackets, like these games don't matter as much. But
yeah.
I mean, these are good teams. Like tonight, I mean, UCLA and St. Bonaventure are two, you know, really good teams. I mean, that's going to be a legitimately fun game. So, you know, basketball is basketball.
One of the things you put together recently was the Draft Lover's Guide to the Tournament. I was just talking about that. What do you see when you look across the tournament bracket as far as the NBA draft is concerned?
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, the overwhelming majority of the top prospects are, you know, in this tournament, which is nice because, you know, the last couple of years didn't have, you know, Markelle Fultz, Washington, they missed the tournament. Ben Simmons and LSU missed the tournament. So this year, you know, you have DeAndre Ayton, and, you know, you got pretty much all the top guys, except from being the international players like Luka Doncic. But, you know, I mean, if you go region by region, I mean, there's just a lot to be excited about. I mean, the East region has a ton of great point guards. You know, you got the Blue Bloods in the Midwest. You know, you got four or five really, really well-coached teams in the West. And then the South, you know, you have eight. You got Mohamed Bamba and Kentucky, you know, and just a lot to think about.
Everybody always says great guards win in this tournament, but you also pointed out in another piece that you've got some big men in the college game right now that are really intriguing from an NBA perspective. Are we seeing a shift back to the big man game?
You know, it's a little bit of both. I mean, I think that, you know, seeing the whole small ball revolution with Golden State and now Houston, you know, is playing fast, but it seems, you say small ball, I mean, they're not really necessarily playing smaller. They're just playing faster and playing more versatile. And so, you know, there's never going to be, like, tall players are always going to be valuable in the NBA. But the question is, you know, how well do you move? You know, defensively, what can you take away? You know, can you defend in space? You know, how are you going to be? And I think you're seeing, you know, these big athletic guys, you know, being groomed now to play these roles the pro game demands. So it's sort of a pushback, but more less in a philosophical sense and more in just like these guys are now tailoring themselves for the game.
We're talking to Jeremy Wu, Sports Illustrated, and The Crossover covers basketball there. In the NBA, we're watching the Blazers now, winners of 10 straight, also well aware that there's part of the league that's in a race to the bottom. How many teams do you think legitimately or theoretically are racing for draft picks versus trying to make the playoffs? Where's that division?
I mean, I think the standings pretty clearly kind of drive the line. I mean, I was looking at it yesterday, you know, sort of looking at, we have a mock draft coming out this week on our site, and I was looking at the standings trying to do the order. And I mean, it's pretty stratified, I mean, between the teams that are the haves and the have-nots right now. And, you know, I don't want to say which teams are actually tanking and which teams aren't, but it's pretty clear which ones are bad and which ones are going to be, you know, in that lottery and have a chance to get the number one pick. And, you know, at the same time, you have this big cluster of teams that are really competing, you know, in the West. And the East is a little bit less so. But, I mean, there are a lot of teams that are competitive still. It's an interesting sort of polarization, I think.
What do you see the Blazers doing now that maybe they weren't doing as well early on?
Yeah, you know, I mean, they looked good last night. I mean, to be honest, you know, I haven't been as plugged. I've been so plugged into college basketball lately that I don't have, like, the expert opinion here. But I do think that there's something to be said for, you know, Portland's continuity. You know, we don't talk about it quite as much with, you know, all the emphasis that we put on free agency, but you can look at Portland and you can look at Toronto too, as, you know, teams are really sort of coming into their own right now. You know, have had the same core players for a few years, have not had major, you know, free agent splashy moves, but just have been able to get it done. So I think there's something to be said for that.
In college basketball, and in particular, you know, let's just talk conferences, because the Pac-12 is, you know, being downgraded this year, saying, look, it's just not as good as it has been in years past. Maybe some of that is due to a lot of the early entry guys that left the conference last year, including Lonzo Ball. But What do you see around the rest of the country? What's the tournament going to tell us, Jeremy, if you can forecast? Which of these conferences is going to come out looking great?
It's a tough question. I'm here in New York, and I just sat through, or I don't want to say sat through, I scouted the entire, Big Ten tournament, entire ACC tournament, a little bit of the Big East. I was able to come out west and see some of the Pac-12 teams. I mean, I think the ACC, they got the most bids. I think a lot of those teams are, strong. If I had to, hang my hat on and say, this conference will, perform well, I feel pretty good about those teams based on what I saw. The Big 12 and the SEC are both really deep this year as well. I can't really pick one, and it's hard because, unpredictability.
Yeah.
Of one game, one game anyone can win. But, those are probably the three conferences that sort of set themselves apart this season.
All right, give us a couple of players to watch as you look at college basketball, maybe from a draft perspective, or this is just a really interesting player that maybe people haven't seen a lot of.
Yeah, you gotta watch DeAndre Ayton. I know it's obvious, but, with the way he played in the Pac-12 tournament, just was blown away. I know everyone knows he's good, but, when he's playing like that, it's, pretty special. He's number one prospect, will probably be a number one pick, and it's good time to be familiar with his game right now. So I would say, Arizona has to be a must-watch team. Another kid who's playing great is Gilgeous Alexander at Kentucky. The point guard, and unfortunately, those two teams are going to bump into each other in the second round, right? So only one of those teams will get to advance. But those are two players who I think are sort of helping or fun to watch. Gilgeous Alexander is really helping himself and with NBA teams as well.
You fill out a bracket?
I did.
How high?
It's still mine.
How difficult? I always fill it out. Like I think I know what I'm going to do, and then as I fill it out, by the end, I look back. I go, "What the hell happened?" Like, what is going to, why do I have them in the Final Four? And I look up and I have Purdue winning the whole thing. What did you come away with in your bracket?
Yeah, well, I always obsess with these things. And this year is the first year that, I publicly put it up on our site. We have our expert picks up. And so I was really, even more careful and, thoughtful about what I was doing, knowing that it was going to be picked apart. But my Final Four, I have Arizona coming out. I just was a gut feel. I don't know if I'll actually beat Virginia, but you got to do something different. They have the talent to do it. I have Villanova winning the whole thing and coming out of the East. I thought they, all season have been the best team, and I've gotten to see them a couple times up close. And, I really like Jalen Brunson, and I sort of believe in him as sort of the guy who can lead them, to the title. I have Michigan State coming out of the Midwest. Don't really love any of those teams. I think Duke, Michigan State, Kansas are all flawed.
Yeah.
But someone has to come out of there. And then in the West, I have North Carolina coming out. They're just playing great basketball right now. Got to see them at the ACC tournament. I like, sort of it's a very unselfish team. They move the ball well. They make hustle plays. And they're experienced, right? They won last year. So I think those factors make them, things that I feel confident about, at least, getting to the Final Four.
All right. Jeremy, who's the number one overall pick in the NBA draft?
It's going to be Ayton. I'd be shocked if it's not. I think there's some debate on some level between him and Luka Doncic, terrific European kid from Slovenia playing for Real Madrid. But, Ayton, to me, has to be the guy. Just if you look at his physical tools, what he does is just different. It's like every now and then you see, a great player – coming out of college and you're like, wow, that looks like I haven't seen that before. And for me, Ayton is one of those guys. He might be the best, most interesting college big I've seen since Anthony Davis, honestly. So, I think he has to be the guy.
I appreciate you, man. Jason Wu, Sports Illustrated. Thanks, Jason.
Thanks.
All right. The crossover in Sports Illustrated, you can read his stuff there and watch his projects. Hey, it's really interesting in filling out the bracket because you have the same dilemmas. In the East, Villanova is the one seed. I think Villanova is going to have some trouble with West Virginia, who is a five seed in that bracket. And that was a tough one for me. I also think Purdue might have been a number one seed had this tournament bracket been picked a month earlier. I love Purdue. And I felt like I was brainwashed a little bit by Jerry Palm of CBS Sports, who came on the show. He's a big Purdue honk. And he started talking about how great Purdue was. And then I start watching Purdue and I go, yeah, they're really experienced. Yeah, they're really good. And all of a sudden, Like I had Wisconsin winning the whole thing last year. All of a sudden, I have Purdue winning the national championship. I agree with him. I have Michigan State in my Final Four. I think he's right about Duke and Kansas. I think they're both flawed, and I think Michigan State, I like Tom Izzo. I like what Michigan State is and who they are. I think Gonzaga is going to be interesting in the West. North Carolina, a lot of people are picking North Carolina, Xavier. I think Gonzaga could end. I have Gonzaga in my Final Four again, I believe. Am I a sucker? I also picked Virginia. So my Final Four was number one seed Virginia, a number four seed Gonzaga, a number three seed Michigan State, and a number two seed Purdue. Tweet at me, at John Canzano BFT. Give me your Final Four.
John Canzano, the bald-faced truth. Brought to you by High Caliber Millwrights.
Coming up, our big splash. It's the one thing you need to know in sports. If you're just tuning in and you need to know what you need to know, we'll bring that to you momentarily. Want to give a shout out to the Yard House and Cody and the gang there. World's largest selection of draft beer, great food, classic rock. I've seen behind the scenes there. Cody took me into the beer cooler at the Yard House. And it's like a spaceship being behind the scenes in a space shuttle. I've literally seen all the beer lines, all the kegs, felt the cool breeze of all that beer. And there is a certain scent when you're in like the cooling room at the Yard House with 130 kegs in there. There's a certain like beers in the air scent that like makes you go, I need to sit down and have a beer. We were there on Sunday as part of this Selection Sunday viewing party that we put on. I want to thank everybody who came out for that event. I know it was a beautiful day outside, but quite a few people came to the Yard House to check out the scene. And we had our VIP table with the six people that we invited on air. You may have heard that. There were also a lot of other people in the room, and I want to thank everybody who made that part of their day. If you're going to watch the games with 31 televisions, the Yard House is not a bad place to start your viewing party yourself on Thursday and Friday. It's a, you know, it's the greatest spectacle in sports. There's a reason why March Madness is mad, and it's the opening days. It's Thursday and Friday. So you could do far worse than by calling your buddies and go, hey, meet me at the Yard House, downtown Portland, 888 Southwest 5th Avenue, and check out March Madness along with a lot of other people that I think are going to be playing hooky from work or taking the day off or taking in the games. But the Yard House will have all of those games. And throughout March Madness is not a bad place if it's food or drink and, of course, draft beer on tap that you're looking for. I think it's a really cool space. Like when you walk in, it's got like this balcony area that goes all around the top. I had not been there before Sunday. You go downstairs into the heart of the place and you've got, you know, 31 televisions and a great bar and great service, of course. But shout out to our friends at the Yard House who did a terrific job putting on that event and will do great when it comes to selection, not just Selection Sunday, but March Madness itself. And for those of you who are interested, you can go to yardhouse.com. If you want to see more about the Yard House. But, you know, St. Patrick's, yes, that's a big deal for a lot of people. But also the Yard House, if you've been there, there's an energy there that you know, then a little bit of excitement there, a little bit of experience that goes on when you go into a place like that. So check that out. And thanks to Cody and the team for hosting us on Sunday. I will be back in there, of course. And that, of course, brings us to our big splash.
This is
the one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it. Where?
Down there.
Must be. The Big Splash. Brought to you by Carl's Jr.
The Big Splash is a three-pointer in the fourth quarter. Blazers looking for 10 straight.
Lillard walks it up. Magruder to defend. Dane throws to Turner. Back to Lillard far side. Another three on the way. This one's good.
Damian Lillard restoring order.
Restoring order. There you go. That's it. I think that your big splash has to be the Blazers winning 10 straight. It is our big splash. What am I talking about? You don't get a vote in this. This is my big splash. And it's the one thing you need to know. The Blazers are red hot. Are they red hot? Is that hotter than white hot? Like, because coals, white hot coals or red hot coals? Which is hotter? Come on, where's our resident expert?
White.
You think white hot coals are hotter?
We agree back here, it's white.
We being you and the spider that is in your pocket, or what? Don't even get me started.
And Adriana.
Adriana's over there. By the way, Adriana has a massive fear of spiders. We know this. How? How afraid of spiders are
you? Just because I talk about my distaste towards any crawling bug ever.
If we gave you, like, some kind of financial incentive, like we were going to say, hey, $100, $100 bill to let spiders crawl all over your face.
Not enough. Not even close.
But you do it. There's an amount of money?
There is an amount, but it's not $100.
Not $100. Like Fear Factor.
That's always been the one thing. I would do everything else on Fear Factor except the bug part. I would, like, jump off buildings or whatever, but, like, the bugs just get to me.
I've seen them blend things that I'm not in favor of. You know, that's not a good thing. All right, so you're in agreement that white-hot coals are hotter than red-hot. The Blazers are white-hot, then, if it comes to coals, and they will go for 11 straight. And if you are a Blazer fan, you have to be happy with this, right? Don't look a gift horse in the mouth. I hear Blazer fans going, you know, is it real? Can we believe in it? Are they going to finish in the third spot or not? Just enjoy the journey. For crying out loud, you're like a little kid in the backseat of the car. Are we there yet? Are we there yet? How much longer do we have? I was like, enjoy the ride. Look out the window. Play bingo. Play freeway bingo or something. Listen to some music. For crying out loud, there's some people who just want to be miserable. You see, sports is supposed to be the diversion. Sports is supposed to be the place you go where you don't have to deal with the nonsense, the petty nonsense, the small people. Do you work with small people in your office? And by small people, I mean people who are little people. Petty. Little. Caught up with being miserable and unhappy. See, like in sports, we always talk about great winning streaks or great teams come out, or they're born of culture, they're born of chemistry, they're born of talented people and culture and chemistry and opportunity, right? Well, in your work setting, do you find that some people in your work setting, maybe they're not the most talented or bright? Maybe they don't have a great grasp of culture or chemistry. And for reasons that they cannot fathom, they're not being successful. That's who sports is for. Those people especially. Because it should be about the journey. It should be about immersing yourself in the escape. Don't go into a movie in a movie theater and sit there and go, well, this is impossible. You can't remove someone's face, Nicolas Cage, and put it on someone else. Transformers, cars can't talk. Don't do that. Don't be that guy. Have you ever been in theater and somebody does that? I was in a theater. I was in the movie Get Out. It was in the theater. The guy behind me was talking the whole time about what was unrealistic about the movie. Just immerse yourself in it. It's a movie. The Shape of Water? Come on. If you're not immersed in that and you're not enjoying the ride, you'd be sitting there the whole time going, how would this be possible? They wouldn't do that. Well, of course not. It's a movie. Your life is not a movie. Do you have people too that are in your life that think they're in a movie? They'll give you like that money line and then they'll be looking around like somebody should come in and go, and that's it. Stop action. No, you're not in a movie. You're not living in a movie. This is your life. So sit back, and when a team wins 10 in a row, enjoy the damn ride. You don't sit in the movie theater and nitpick it. You can talk about it. You can sit back and go, hey, this is great. This is exciting. This is what I like about it. This is what I don't like about it. But don't sit there when your team has given you the gift of 10 straight wins and be unhappy with it somehow. That's like people who are making boatloads of money saying, well, I'm paying a lot of taxes. You're making boatloads of money. You should want to pay taxes. Should want to pay a lot of taxes. pay more taxes next year. That means you're making more money, for crying out loud. You know, it's like the guy in the gym. He's lifting more weight than ever, and he's like, I'm having to lift more weight than ever. You're in better shape because of it, dude. By the way, there's a guy in the gym I go to that wears a weight vest. Like a actual weight vest. Not just like ankle weights, but a full weight vest. He looks like he's going to be fly fishing. And I keep thinking to myself, it's cool that you're wearing that in the gym, but wouldn't it be cooler if you wore it all day long? Like not around here so much? Not to nitpick the guy in the gym, but let's enjoy the journey a little bit. Leave it here. We're going to give away some Mariners tickets coming up. You have to be present to win.
John Canzano, the bald-faced truth. Brought to you by High Caliber Millwrights.
Yeah, a lot of sports fans who are saying this is a sad day. Why is it such a sad day? People are pointing out that in the NFL, it's the time of year where, you know, players leave to go sign with other teams. Washington Redskins quarterback Kirk Cousins, he plans to go to Minnesota. Is that sad if you're a Washington fan? Droz, you're a Washington fan. Is that kind of a sad thing, or is that a let it go?
It was kind of expected. I mean, I think everybody kind of knew Kirk Cousins was on his way out, especially when they went and traded for Alex Smith. So you basically get the same guy, just a little bit older.
All right. How about Haloti Ngata going to the Eagles? Is that a sad thing for somebody? Sammy Watkins signs with the Chiefs, $48 million. Is that a sad thing for somebody? It got me thinking about what is sad in sports. Do you remember your saddest day as a sports fan? If for a moment on a rainy day in the state of Oregon, we can reflect on what is your saddest day as a sports fan, I would like to hear it. Does it have to do with a player retiring? Does it have to do with an injury? Does it have to do with a player who said, you know what, I'm going to go play for somebody else? Seahawks fans, is it a sad day when Michael Bennett leaves to go to the Eagles? It is a Saturday when Richard Sherman signs with the Niners after being released. 24 hours. Was that a sad 24 hours if you're a Seahawk fan? Sad day when Ken Griffey Jr. left the Mariners? Sad day when Greg Oden got hurt? You tell me. 503-417-7575. I want you to give me what you remember as your saddest day as a sports fan. I know mine, without a doubt. And it has to do with baseball. Because I grew up a diehard baseball fan. And in 1989, my team was in the World Series. And not only was my San Francisco Giants team in the World Series, they were in the World Series against the Bay Area rival Oakland A's. The Bay Bridge Series. And on October the 17th, at 5:04, there was an earthquake. And I feel petty and stupid for even saying this, because people died in the earthquake. And that was a sad thing, obviously. But from a sports perspective, that World Series was such a dud for me. Because I finally, my team, after all that losing, and a team you really could like, with Will Clark and Robbie Thompson. It was just a really likable team in 1989. And they were up against the Oakland A's, which had Jose Canseco and Mark McGwire and Dave Stewart. And the Oakland A's dominated that World Series. Just won it going away. And the earthquake kind of kicked it off, because you may remember that that series was opening. And all of a sudden there was an earthquake and the broadcast went off air. That was a sad, sad series and a sad day on October the 17th. I'll never forget it. 1989. Give me your sad day in sports. What is it? Did someone retire? Did somebody go away? Was it Franco Harris leaving to go to the Seahawks? What was that sad day for you as a sports fan? 503-417-7575. Let's go to Longview. We've got Sean. Sean?
How you doing?
Drown your sorrows.
When the Seahawks went to that second Super Bowl in a row against the Patriots, and then we threw the interception on the 1 yard line. One of the best running backs in the league at that point.
Give the ball to Marshawn.
Yeah. Well, and this week, you know, us losing Richard Sherman, Michael Bennett. Apparently, Jimmy Graham's going to the Packers. Doing a whole rebuild. That's also another sad day. The Legion of Boom may no longer be.
Yeah, you're seeing a lot of the players that really were part of all that joy going away, aren't you?
Yep.
Yeah, it's hard. I'm telling you. You know, you probably remember the great moments in your sports history that brought you all that joy. He probably remembers dismantling the Broncos in the Super Bowl, winning that world championship, the parade, Skittles being thrown into the crowd. And then, what, a year later? Oh. On the, you know, it's the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. Give me your sad day. Drown your sorrows here. Ted's in Portland. Ted, what is it?
Hi, you can call me Raider Ted. I really appreciate your show.
Thank you.
I want to say, I don't know the date, but I know Bo Jackson was playing against the Cincinnati Bengals on a freak tackle and destroyed one of the finest running backs' careers ever. That was my sad day.
Yeah, that was a playoff game.
Yeah, and it was records waiting to be broken and smacked, you know, woulda, shoulda, coulda.
January 1991.
Second place, Brandon Roy, the natural. Mm. We lost a player they called the natural to a knee injury. That's number two.
By the way, do you remember who tackled Bo Jackson on that play?
No, I don't. I remember hearing Bo's explanation of it. He just was putting so much power into the run that it was a freak. But no, who was it?
It was a guy named Kevin Walker. It was a 34-yard run that essentially ended his career. And, like, you saw Bo later, like, not the same, which was really hard. Ugh. Terrible to see that. Remember when he came back? Like, the Royals didn't think he would be able to play. They released him. The Chicago White Sox signed him 16 days later. Like, he only played 23 games, including six in the minors. And he underwent hip surgery the following winter. But, you know, Bo, who went on, by the way, hit 32 home runs and hit 248 in three seasons after the injury, was never the same. Jeff's in Portland. Jeff, give me that sad day.
Well, John... It was the day that Magic Johnson announced he was retiring from the NBA because he was HIV positive.
Where were you when you heard that?
Oh, I was working for a construction company called, name was Morris Brothers, which is now Knife River Corporation, down in Harrisburg, down by Eugene. And yeah, I got to... I had a few friends or coworkers, I should say, that gave me a hard time about it, saying that Magic had AIDS.
Yeah.
Which, you know, when I, yeah, that's when I first heard about it. And I'm like, no, no way. You are full of it.
Right. It was unbelievable. It was unbelievable.
Later in the day, then I found out what was really going on. And yeah, I'll never forget that.
November the 7th, 1991.
Correct.
Well, Jeff, there it was, a sad day. Magic's still alive. Brad's in Milwaukee. Brad, give us that sad day.
I remember that Magic Johnson day, John, too. I wanted to cry.
Yeah.
It was horrible. But I think it was more of a local flavor type thing, you know. I started taking my son, my son is 22 now. He's actually playing professional baseball. He signed out of high school 4 years ago. But I started taking him to the Portland Rockies games when he was about 2 years old, and then when they left town, started taking him to the Beavers games. I mean, we went to most of the games, most of the batting practices. We were down there three or four times a week, and baseball was so special to us. And, like, when he was growing up, when he was a little kid, the baseball players to him were like Disney characters. I mean, he was way, way more interested in all of that in baseball than, you know, like Disney or Rugrats, stuff like that. And probably the saddest day for me was when the Beavers were going to be leaving town. There was no talk of another team coming in. They were just leaving. They were going to turn the stadium into a soccer/football stadium only. The baseball team was gone. And I remember, I don't know what day it actually was. It had to have been probably in September, you know, one of those days.
September 7th, 2010.
They left town after the game. I believe it was Rich helped me out that he's announcing for the Hops now. The announcer,
Rich Burke,
after the game was over, stayed on the air for about a half hour or so, half hour, 45 minutes, reminiscing about baseball in Portland with the years of the Beavers, and just talking about it, and the way he just so eloquently speaks. And I remember just after the game was over, I just remember sitting in my living room in the dark, listening to Rich Burke talk about the Portland Beavers. Baseball was leaving Portland.
It doesn't end there, though, Brad. I mean, it's like they took Friends of Baseball got home plate on September the 7th, and they took it, and they've kept it, and they said they're going to keep it until baseball comes back to Portland. Friends of Baseball still have that home plate. I have one line open. Baseball come back to Portland? I want to hear from you. Give me that sad day. We're going to take just a two-minute break. We'll be right back with more of your phone calls. Tell me that saddest sports day in your history. Dre's going to lead us off right after the break.
So I want you all to listen up. This is important stuff, all right?
Okay. Here we go.
The bald-faced truth.
Call 503-417-7575 or 877-733-0750 or text to 64636.
Here we go in 3, 2.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth. Brought to you by High Caliber Millwrights. In need of getting your plant or machinery job done right the first time and on time? Then call High Caliber today.
It's time to drown your sorrows, right? It's a rainy day here in the state of Oregon. What happened to yesterday? The kids in my household wanted to go swimming yesterday. So what happened? I got out, I cleaned the leaves out of the pool, took the cover off, put the cushions out. It was barely warm enough to swim, but it was like, there's sun out, we're going swimming. They went swimming, and today, what happened? The pool cover's on, the pump's on top of the cover, because it's just pouring rain. And guess who was stuck out there picking up all those cushions in the rain? That was me, all right? I want your sadness. That was my sadness. But I want your sports sadness. Give me that day. Somebody get traded away. Somebody lose something. That day as a sports fan, then you were maybe at your low. Phone lines are full, so I'm not even giving the number. Dre's in Portland. Dre, you lead us off.
Jay, I almost cried sitting here in the drive-thru waiting for you to get to my call, man. I'm thinking about Hank Gathers, man. That was a powerful moment. That was a powerful moment, man. And to have Bo Kimble honor his friend and teammate with the left-handed free throw, that's powerful, man.
What do you remember of that period of your life and maybe even basketball? Because I just remember you mentioned Kimble shooting free throws. I rooted like hell for that Loyola team.
That Loyola Marymount team, it became my team, man. Like, you know, you just wanted to root for the dude, man, and you know, he had already had the, I think, you know, he had passed out earlier in the year. And to see all of that, it was tough, man. And, you know, to see that young dude go out doing something that he loved and, you know, after the alley-oop, and it was just a powerful moment. I'll never forget that tournament. I can't remember the year of the tournament.
1990.
There you go. Loyola made that run, and it was beautiful to see, man, and it was all in honor. And you knew his spirit was there, and that was just – it was just a sad moment, man. For a young dude to pass away like that, it was just a sad moment.
Do you remember who beat Loyola in that tournament?
Was it UNLV?
UNLV got them on the way to their national championship.
I figured because, you know, that was when Tart, you know, was having that run, man. He had all those dudes. So, but that was just that moment in itself, man. That Lynn Bias moment, but the Hank Gathers moment to me, I was young. I was 18. I was playing ball, and to have people calling you talking about Dre, man, did you hear about Hank Gathers? I'm like, no, That, it was crazy. It was crazy.
The score of that UNLV Loyola game on March 25th, 1990 was 131-101. I mean, it was that was some fun basketball to watch, though, in a tournament where everybody was scoring in like 58-56. You know, that was fun to watch. Thanks, Dre, for that. Yeah, Hank Gathers passing away in March of 1990. That was sad. Give me a sad day in your sports legacy. Mike's in Gresham. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi, John. Hey, just talking about Dre's call. I was at the University of Portland when Hank Gathers died. I went to school there, and they were playing Portland when he died. And Greg Anthony played on that UNLV team that beat him, and he started his career at the University of Portland. Anyway, I have two sad days. One, a death just like that one. December 31st, 72, I believe, Roberto Clemente dies in a plane crash going to take aid.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. We talk about Thurman Munson and Roberto Clemente almost in the same breath.
Yeah. And the other one is a team one. It's not quite so bad. I was a big-time Red Sox fan. My brother, for whatever reason, was a Met fan. And when that ground ball went through Billy Buckner's legs, a little bit of me died that day.
I won't replay that.
Thanks.
I was going to replay that. I'm not going to do that to you. Buckner threw his legs. I think it was Mookie Wilson. Ugh. Mitchell's in Portland. Mitchell, give me your saddest sports moment.
Hey, John. A couple people already touched on that were sad for me was when Brandon Roy, you know, decided it was time to hang up his shoes. That was really sad for me. He was idle growing up. Another sad day someone touched on was when the Portland Beavers left. But I think the saddest for me personally growing up as a Ducks fan was when Dennis Dixon, you know, hurt his knee against the Wildcats of Arizona. And, you know, I think the Ducks were ranked top five and they were looking to have a national championship push. And then when he went down, I think they must have lost the final three or four remaining games of that season and ended up playing in the Sun Bowl. But that was really bad for me.
Yeah, I remember I was there that day and I was in the press box in Tucson when he went down, and that was 2007, and November 15th, 2007, and I remember, you know, Oregon was ranked second, Dixon was in the Heisman talk, and, you know, we all knew his knee had the potential to not be right, but in the first quarter of that game, Dennis Dixon goes 39 yards for a touchdown on a running play where he mostly was running straight ahead. And everybody thought, wow, and Oregon went for two and got it, remember? Ran the swinging gate. But once Dixon went down in that game, it was like Oregon was not the same. And that was a 5-6 Arizona team. That was a sad day. Shannon's in Southeast Portland. Go ahead, Shannon.
Yeah, I was thinking about, I think it was 1979. I was living up off of Highway 17 above Santa Cruz, and Thurman Munson got killed.
Yeah. You hit it, man. We were just talking about Clemente and then Thurman Munson. It was August of 1979.
Yeah, that was a tough one. I was sitting next to my girlfriend, and she looks over at me, and she says, "What are you? You got tears running down your cheeks." And I said, "Yeah, Thurman Munson just got killed." She goes, "Who's he?" So, you know, what
yeah.
did I do? Bad day.
You talk about the emotional leader of teams. He was a captain of captains. You know, we talk about captains. He was Lou Gehrig was captain of the Yankees. Thurman Munson was the next player ever to be named captain of the Yankees. You know, and he's the only Yankee in history to win Rookie of the Year and MVP. 11 years with the Yankees, died in August of 1979. Let's go to Carson, who's in Malala. Carson, welcome.
So as a fellow Duck fan, as a prior caller or two callers ago, the 2010 BCS National Championship game.
Yeah.
Oregon and Auburn, that Michael Dyer not going down all the way, running that touchdown in. That, and I remember having to go to school the next day, or the following Monday, and just getting just beat up by friends. Everyone talking about how the Ducks lost because I wore my 12-0 Duck shirt to school the day before the championship. Oh, man, that was a low point for a Duck fan.
I was near Chip Kelly on the Ducks sideline when Dyer had that run. I was literally just a few feet away from him. And I got to tell you, the look on his face was disbelief because he was processing what just happened and what do I need to do next. And he would just kind of, his face just kind of went blank, Carson.
And that's how it felt because watching the game, everyone on the field stopped. Auburn, Oregon players, yeah. Everyone. And then he just took off running again. And it was like, what just happened?
Yeah, and then you could see he was like going, okay, how much time do we have? Do we let do we have time to come back from this? Do we let him score a touchdown? Do we make him kick a field? Like, what was going to happen there? Chris is in Tigard. Chris, your saddest moment. Go ahead.
Yeah, two of my childhood idols. One, Ali fighting Larry Holmes, and Holmes looking at the ref to stop it.
Yeah.
And just watching Ali get pummeled. It was awful. And then a few years back, they did I think it was all Heisman Trophy winners, and Earl Campbell, them helping him out, everyone else standing for the picture because he had to sit.
Yeah.
And then listening to him stumble through his words and barely be able to walk. I remember those two as like superheroes.
Yeah, because they're the greatest. And then all of a sudden, they're, you remember Ali? I had the same feeling you had when he fought Holmes. I hated Holmes for it. But, you know, I don't know if you heard my interview with Holmes just this last year. Right prior to the Mayweather-McGregor fight, we had Holmes on. And you should go on SoundCloud or iTunes and subscribe to the Radio Show podcast and listen to that interview. It's free. You should go on there and do it. Because Holmes, Holmes talked about how sad he was. That he had tears in his...
I watched it the other day, and I watched him turn to the referee when he had him in the corner and like, asking him, are you going to stop this?
Yeah.
You know, and the referee was saying, fight on, so he hit him a couple more times and look at him again.
Yeah, he said he had tears in his eyes, and I asked him why, and he said, because that guy was my hero.
Yeah, yeah, that was rough.
Thank you for sharing that, Chris and Tigard. Let's go to Tony, who's in Portland. Tony, give me your sad sports moment.
Good afternoon, John. I'm going back to 1999-2000 season, Game 7. Everybody knows the deal, but, man, I was crushed for, like, weeks. And, I don't know, just a couple of years ago, I finally got over my hatred for Shaq and Kobe, but it lasted forever. That was just brutal. I mean, you know, down 3-1, you come back, tied up Game 7, you got the lead going to fourth. But, hey, that's why we love sports. It kills us and it pumps us up.
So. That's the agony of defeat. You just needed a little thrill of victory, right? Like the next season for the Blazers. He's talking about the Western Conference Finals. See, I think we're all okay with a little agony of defeat as long as the thrill of victory comes with it. And I think that was part of the problem with the Blazers of the 2000 Western Conference Finals. Because you got the agony of defeat before you got the thrill of victory. And guess what? Then they broke up the team. If that team would have just been kept together, they would have been fine. I don't know why Bob Whitsitt broke up that team. I've asked him. I've asked Damon Stoudemire. I've talked to other Blazers who are on that team. And they're all like, I don't know why. Dylan's in Eugene. Dylan, what's your sad sports moment?
So mine's a game, John, and I was 9 years old and a huge San Francisco 49ers fan. And I don't remember the exact day, but it was the 1991 NFC Championship. And when Roger Craig fumbled the ball, and then eventually the Giants kicked the field goal to go to the Super Bowl. And I think that's the last time I've ever cried during a game. I was nine, and just my middle name's Montana, and I was born on the day of the catch. So I'm a Niner fan. I got to be a Niner fan. So that's my number one.
It was January the 20th, 1991, and that ended with a 15-13 New York Giants win at Candlestick Park. But you're so right. Like, all the Niners had to do was run the clock out. They were fine. They were fine.
Yeah, exactly.
But see, to my point, Dylan, you got the thrill of victory, right? The Niners won some Super Bowls. And see, that's where I think the other fan bases didn't have it. You had your agony of defeat. But you got some thrill of victory with it. Coming up next, I'm going to give away some Mariners tickets. If you want to tell me about your sad sports moment, you can at 503-417-7575. We'll also talk to Seattle Times reporter Ryan Divish, who's covering the Mariners. Are they any damn good or not? He'll tell us next.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano, brought to you by High Caliber Millwrights.
All right, I still want your saddest sports day. Somebody retire, somebody get hurt, your team lose. Let's commiserate. 503-417-7575. Let's go to Ryan Divish, tremendous reporter for the Seattle Times. He covers the Mariners. If you are somebody who loves baseball, read Ryan Divish. He does a really good job writing it. I love baseball. I grew up playing baseball. My dad played professional baseball. I like watching baseball. I like reading about baseball. Ryan Divish writes it well, and he joins us now. Is that a good introduction?
Thanks, man. I don't even really know where to go from there. If I could have recorded that, or if you can record that and send that to my bosses, Seattle Times, I'd like that immensely.
Did you grow up a baseball fan, or is this just a job?
No, I grew up a baseball fan. I played in college. I mean, this was my sport. And so, baseball is really my first true love. In the off season, baseball is my love. I have a college basketball habit that I watch a ton of college hoops. I mean, I can't get enough of college hoops, but no, baseball is my really one true love. And it's been that way since I was a kid. I think my first 12 games I ever saw were in the Metrodome. I loved Kirby Puckett, roughly, because I knew I was going to be about as tall as him. That's what I always wanted to do. And so when I went to the News Tribune way back in 2006 in Tacoma, Paul Miller, who was the editor, said, he looked at me and he looked at Eric Williams. We were both hired as kind of GA guys. They said, I'm looking at my Seahawks writer and my future Mariners writer. And we both kind of looked at him like, yeah, you're on drugs. But now Eric covered the Seahawks, now he covers the Chargers, and I cover the Mariners. So I guess Paul was right.
I told a story earlier. I grew up a Giants fan in the Bay Area, and the 89 series was a real downer in that. I was so hopeful. We had been through so much as the Giants had been so bad, and suddenly they were in the World Series, and earthquake comes, and then the A's just pummeled them. And do you have a sad sports moment that you remember?
As University of Montana alum, my first time I ever went to the national championship, they won it. And then I went to the next three, and they lost all the next three, including one where a friend of mine was playing wide receiver, Mark Mariani, and he had about 250 yards receiving in the first half. And for some reason, they couldn't get him the ball in the second half. There was a minor meltdown. I was crushed. I've never taken a loss that hard in my life. Because, John, you know how it is. You don't get to be a fan a lot of,
right.
For me, none of the professional sports or anything, but I really only have Montana football and basketball. And so I get crushed easily. Like if Montana would have lost the other night in the Big Sky Championship and not gotten into the tournament, there would have been a temper tantrum of epic proportions.
I love that. And you hit on something too, because you go to spring training. Is that a chance for you to kind of, in addition to the reporting about the Mariners, can you sit back and be a fan at any point there?
You can just enjoy the baseball and just kind of enjoy the sunshine, given what we've had this winter. I mean, that's what you're excited about. But now, I mean, I still just kind of kick back and have to write about the Mariners. What I like is sometimes just writing the offbeat story. You get some guys that are different down there, maybe something that isn't just about swings and mechanics and stuff like that. Or, the guy that's coming back from injury, that's kind of what you look for, something fun like that. I've been trying to work on the story about why baseball players choose the gloves that they use and what style they want. So I'm trying to get them to nerd out about that, but I don't know when I'm going to actually finish that. That might not be till the regular season. But, spring training does give you a chance to kind of be a little more creative than just writing game story and notebook. Although with this spring, basically all I write about is a medical report every day of who's hurt and who's not.
Our listeners want to know if the Mariners are going to be any damn good. Are they going to be any damn good?
I think I'd have them winning 82 games.
Okay.
But I'm wrong frequently. I just came back from Vegas for the Pac-12 tournament. For as much college basketball as I watch, I didn't win a damn thing. So, I have them winning about 82 games. It's tough when you're in the same division as the Astros and even a very improved Angels team. And right now with all the injuries questions that they have, and their starting pitching wasn't that good when it was healthy. I'm not seeing it. I'm not seeing how they can to break that streak of 16 straight years without a postseason appearance.
We're talking to Ryan Divish of the Seattle Times. What has to go right? Like, if we're talking surprises, let's say they're relevant, maybe they make a move at some point. What are the kind of things that need to fall in place?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think they'll score runs. I don't assume that Nelson Cruz and Robinson Cano are just – Cruz just got hurt about 20 minutes ago. But I don't think their injuries are that serious. It's going to keep them out. So if you have those guys and Kyle Seager and the addition of D. Gordon, they're going to score runs. But a year ago, they used 40 different pitchers, 17 different starting pitchers. And, you know, they didn't really do a lot to supplement that this year. They've had a reliever, but their starting rotation has huge issues. And that would have to go right. Like, James Paxton would have to be everything that he was last year, but make 30 starts instead of going on the DL twice. Felix Hernandez, well, I don't think anybody thinks he's going to be King Felix anymore. He can't make only 14 starts in a season. He's got to make 25 to 26 and really try and reinvent himself a little bit. Follow that CC Sabathia path where, you know, you can't always do it the way you used to get out. And then you need guys the back end of the rotation like Mike Leake and Marco Gonzalez and Erasmo Ramirez, who are far from household names, to be pretty productive. Because I think if they're decent by midseason, you know, if they're in the middle of it, they're going to, you know, they have some flexibility to go out and maybe acquire a starting pitcher if they need help in that area or if they need help in a different area.
The feel that you have about the Mariners organization, you know, you've watched them evolve over the years. Where are they at? Are they close? Are they sniffing around, breaking through, or where do you see them?
Yeah, it's tough to I don't know. I every time I think they've made some steps forward, they throw out a clunker of a season. You know, they lose Nelson Cruz after this year. He's a free agent. Felix Hernandez is still under contract for next year at $27 million. Robinson Cano is under contract for like six more years at $24 million a year. I mean, those are guaranteed deals. Those guys can't go anywhere because nobody really wants them. So they have some payroll issues. And the problem is they have one of the worst minor league systems in all of baseball, if not the worst. They don't have prospects. They don't have help coming. And so they're kind of stuck in this middle of the road spot. Our columnist, Matt Calkins, kind of compared them to the Blazers of a few years ago where you didn't really know what they are. They were always just good enough to kind of keep you interested, but never really good enough to go farther. You know, and then the Blazers have added some stars, and they think that they can do that. The Mariners aren't generating stars or star players to push them over that top. They haven't gotten their Dame Littler. They haven't drafted a guy like that to come up and really help them. And, you know, it's obviously different in baseball, but that's the thing is you need to bring guys from within to build on. And then if you can supplement with a free agent, you do that. Well, they're not doing that, and that's been a problem. That's one of the reasons why they haven't been to the postseason in a long time.
Talking to Ryan Divish of the Seattle Times. All right, before I cut you loose, Ichiro back with this team. A lot of fans are excited about it. Is it just a PR move, or is there some benefit that he can add to that clubhouse and that lineup?
Well, the benefit of him being older than me is actually kind of nice. Now, I'm not older than all the players, but I don't know. I mean, yeah, you could say it's a PR move on a lot of levels. Fans are definitely excited about it. I don't know what a 44-year-old guy can contribute. He looks slower, obviously. But they needed an outfielder, a corner outfielder, and they didn't want to commit to a multiple-year contract to one of the remaining free agents. And it kind of goes back to their issues within their farm system. Ben Gamel, who was projected to be their starting left fielder, you know, he pulled his oblique and he's out and he's going to miss the first month of the season. And they didn't have really anybody in-house that could fill in that role that has any sort of experience. And they didn't want to spend, you know, $5 million on a one-year contract and be locked into somebody. So they go out and they get Ichiro and spend $750,000, which seems like a lot to me, maybe not to a radio host and columnist, but it's not very much in big league money. But what I'm curious about is when Ben Gamel comes back, who is better than Ichiro at this point right now in their careers, what happens with Ichiro? How do you designate him for assignment and cut him? I mean, that's an icon in your franchise. Larry Stone, I know, wrote about this. We've discussed it a ton. What do you do with when that happens? If you decide you don't want Ichiro anymore, the divorce could be ugly. I was there, you know, I was covering the team when Ken Griffey Jr. just up and left and drove to Montana and let them know in Montana that, hey, I'm done. I'm not playing anymore. And you don't really want that either. So that's something that I'm definitely going to be watching in about a month or so once Ben Gamel comes back and is healthy.
All right, Ryan, I appreciate you making time for us. You do a great job, and I will see you down the road.
All right, no problem. Take it easy, guys.
All right, there's Seattle Times, Ryan Divish, who does a great job covering the Mariners. How about Ken Griffey Jr. calling from Montana? Say, I'm done. That was a sad day. Give me your sad sports day. Plus, go to 1029thegame.com and fill out your basketball madness bracket. A perfect bracket gets you $1 million. 1029thegame.com. Your phone call's coming up. James in Portland, give us your sad moment.
Hey, John. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a huge Nebraska fan, born and raised there, and I remember 1984 with Turner Gill and Mike Rozier, and they just had this awesome undefeated team. And I remember Tom Osborne, they came back from a 17-0 deficit, and they were going to tie it up, and Tom Osborne decided to go for two, and with pretty much no time remaining. And I was 12 years old when they lost that. And I just remember, I think I destroyed the TV. So not only did they lose, but I got grounded. So that, it made it twice as bad. So
that's difficult. All right. I love that one. More of yours. I want yours. And we will give, we'll have Gliss give his, because he's over there with his, he had his hands buried in his face when I was talking about 1989 and the Giants losing that Bay Bridge series. I have only one line open. You know the number. Give me your sad sports moment or day.
More John Canzano with the bald-faced truth, brought to you by High Caliber Millwrights.
Make it my picks, Basketball Madness 2018, on our website at 1029thegame.com. Go there, compete against me and other personalities from this station. If you would like, it's just for bragging rights, but if you would like, you can even open my bracket and print it out. That will be the answer key in the end. I want you to tell me your sad sports moment. Let's go to Bob, who's at the airport. Bob, what's going on at the airport? That right. Bob apparently made his plane and just left us holding. Let's go to Dan in Portland. Dan, what's going on?
Not much. So I'm an Oregon State diehard fan. So let's set this up. I was turning 29 on November 29, 2008. We all know what happened that day. Civil War, and got crushed, and it ruined my birthday. And Oregon State football has not been the same since.
Do you think that it really ruined your birthday?
No, it didn't. But it was all those stars were aligned. It was my golden birthday, November 29th.
Yeah.
I was ready to take a ticket to go to the Rose Bowl. And I drowned my sorrows at the local Mexican restaurant there in Corvallis.
You scored 38 points, or Oregon State did, in that game.
Yeah, but Oregon scored more. So.
Yeah, Oregon had 65.
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's not bring it up, right? Let's not remember it. But, it's interesting how a sporting event can ruin a day. I have a friend who's a Seahawks fan. I know. Just one. Just so I can say, I have friends who are Seahawks fans when I talk bad about the Seahawks. But my friend, literally, I would not call him on a game day if the Seahawks are struggling. Because he lives with it and he dies with it. James is in Beaverton. James, what's on your mind?
2013-2014 NHL season, huge San Jose Sharks fan, up 3-0 in the playoffs to get reverse swept by the LA Kings, who I hate, and then they go on to win the Stanley Cup to boot.
Yeah. He's got a hockey bad memory? I didn't know hockey had bad memories, sad days.
And then to go to the Stanley Cup and get smoked by the Pittsburgh Penguins. 2 years ago, been rough.
Do you have a thrill of victory day, or is it just bad?
Thrill of victory is being a San Francisco Giants fan, the better half of the 2010 decade, you know?
Yeah.
That was a pretty awesome 6 years that we got to have.
Yeah, we deserved that, though, after that World Series with the Anaheim Angels.
Oh, yeah, when the one out to go. And
yeah, we're not talking about that. Yeah, we're not going to talk about that on today's show. Rogers in Oregon City. Dusty, leave Russ Ortiz in the game, Dusty. You know, I bet Dusty has nightmares still. He's going to the mound and Russ Ortiz is like, I'm good, Skip. And Dusty's like, all right, go win us this World Series. Rogers in Oregon City. Roger, what do you got?
Hi, John. I got two, actually.
Okay.
It killed me when Roy Campanella died of Dodgers. He's my favorite guy. But the second one is Portland Trailblazers, 1978. have two gimpy centers that take up Moses Malone and trade him. I was devastated.
Yeah, the Blazers have made some bad moves in their history. Trading Moses Malone may not get the play it deserves. That might be the worst trade in Blazers history. Okay? Yeah, they passed up Michael Jordan and Larry Bird and Kevin Durant in the draft. They picked Malone in the dispersal draft in 1976. He comes to training camp in the fall of 76 as part of this team that would stun the NBA. They'd win the NBA championship. He plays the exhibition season with the Blazers. They trade him before the start of the regular season. And the story goes that Jack Ramsey didn't want to coach Moses Malone because he had an idea of the style of play that the Blazers were going to play with Bill Walton. Moses Malone was not the passer that Bill Walton was, and he was concerned that, hey, is Malone going to be a problem as a reserve? So they trade him away, but they traded him to Buffalo for a first-round pick. How bad was that trade? Man, you could say, oh, it's a bad trade. Here's how bad that trade was. Moses Malone played two games in Buffalo. They promptly traded him to Houston for two first-round choices. Like two games. Now, the Blazers used that first-round pick with Buffalo to switch places with Indiana. By the way, that was the top pick in the 78 draft. The Blazers then took Michael Thompson, who had a nice career. But what people do not remember is that it was the year that Larry Bird was draft eligible. And according to the NBA rules, at that time, he could choose to return to Indiana State for his senior year, which he did. But five teams passed on him before the Boston Celtics drafted him and held his rights. They got him a year later. It's a bad move. Okay? John's in Wilsonville. Give me your sad moment, John.
So I got two, both of them involving the 49ers draft day. First one being when they passed on Jake Plummer to get Jim Druckenmiller.
The Druck.
A very angry day in our household.
Yeah, the Druck could throw it about 70 yards, but that was about it.
But, yeah, that guy would overthrow the bullet train. and then being a Cal fan, you know, I was so excited that they were going to get Aaron Rodgers, and we all saw what happened there, which in the beginning was a complete debacle. He had Alex Smith turned out to be a pretty decent quarterback, but those first few years were just terrible.
Yeah. By the way, do you know what Druck's claim to fame was after football? You know what he's doing now?
I heard something about it. I can't remember off the top of my head.
He got in a bar fight, and he got convicted of malicious wounding in connection with a bar brawl. And apparently, what he said, according to witnesses, as he left the scene was, "Did you see me kick that guy's butt?" That was the Druck. The Druck. Bob's in Portland. Bob, give me your sad moment.
Hey, John, not the best storyteller, but I can only tell you the facts.
Okay, give me the facts.
I think it was game 7. Somebody mentioned the game earlier when Portland was up big. Trailblazers were up big on the Lakers. We had the game. The thrill of victory was all over the place. But then the Lakers did come back and beat us that game. I was watching the game with my mother. She's in another house in the city. We're watching it on the phone. And then we figured it was going to win. So we said goodbye. Mom called back, and she told me the bad news. Her dog had died.
Oh.
The dog died the same day, during the game, John. During the game.
What was the dog's name?
Peppy. Peppy is a Maltese, fun little dog. No, West Highland Terrier. West Highland Terrier.
Poor Peppy.
Good dog. Yeah, he died during the game. Dang it.
Peppy, may you rest in peace.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
There you go, Bob. I appreciate you calling in. It's so true. You know, Rashid missed 13 field goals in that game. All he had to do was make one at a key moment to interrupt a run. Scottie Pippen shot 3 for 10 in that game. Talking about game 7 of the Western Conference Finals in 2000. Rashid missed 13 field goals and 3 free throws. You know, and look, he scored 40 points in the game, or 30 points in the game. But Pippen shot 3 for 10. Steve Smith missed 10 shots and a free throw. And everybody keeps saying, like, you know, hey, if they just had one shot here, one shot there. Bonzi Wells shot 2 of 7 in that game. Sabonis missed a point-blank layup shot in that game. It just, it's mind-boggling. By the way, for conspiracy theorists out there, I just noticed something from that 2000 Western Conference Finals Game 7 box score. The Lakers shot 37 free throws in that game. Gliss, off the top of your head without looking, how many free throws did the Blazers shoot in that Game 7 of the 2000 Western Conference Finals? Lakers shot 37 free throws. How many did the Blazers shoot?
I'm going to guess somewhere around half.
16. There's your ball game, folks. Leave it right here. I want your sad sports moments. 503-417-7575.
This is the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano, brought to you by High Caliber Millwrights.
It's been a lively show, and the radio show never goes exactly where I expect it to go. And I account for that. We want to be organized, but not so organized that we strangle the show. Because this show breathes, it lives, it's got eyes, it's got ears, it wants to go places. And today it's gone in a sad direction, but not a sad, bad direction. Sometimes it's good to talk about those days that were your saddest sports days. Yeah, because, right, the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. And so many people getting that catharsis that they need in sports. Getting that opportunity to talk about what happened. What made them sad. I do have two lines open. We're going to take a few of these calls, and a lot of this stuff just takes us down memory lane, right? We remember things. Let's go to Jim, who's in Milwaukee. Phone number is 503-417-7575. Jim, go ahead.
Hello, John. Hey, I'm going back a long way back to the World Series of 45 with the Cubs and the Dodgers and Detroit. And that, what's his name, Claude Passau was pitching the third game, and he was feeling a hard line drive with his bare hand, and it tore off his fingernail, and he had to take him out of the game. And they brought in this guy, Hank Baroli, who the Cubs just got from the Yankees. He came in, he got beat, and they lost the series, and we only lived two blocks from Wrigley Field. So I'm 16 years old at that time. A couple of my buddies, every day after school when the Cubs were in town, after the seventh inning, we'd go to the ball game, get in for free, and man, we were really sad for months after that loss.
Yeah, you remember though? Do you remember Baroli won Game One though?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, it was later in that series that you know he got beat in a pretty tough game. What was it like to grow up near Wrigley?
Pardon me?
What was it like to grow up near Wrigley?
Oh, it was wonderful. Hell, it was beautiful. Like I say, we'd come home from school if the Cubs were winning and it was in the seventh inning, we could get in there for free, and we'd go there all the time when they're at home whenever we could.
I love that. I appreciate that call, Jim in Milwaukee. The 45 World Series. Did you think we were talking about that today on the show? Hell no. We got a guy who's like, hey, I grew up near there. Bob's in Portland. Bob, what do you got? Bob's not paying attention. You got to pay attention when you call in. Scott's in Beaverton. Scott, moving along.
Hey, I got two of them, one short and recent. I'm a Saints fan. Boy, that miracle in Minnesota about killed me.
Yeah. What'd you think about Breeze re-signing with New Orleans?
Well, who couldn't be happy about that if you're a Saints fan? But I really think that Jimmy Graham going over to the Packers, that shook me up, too. I don't like that. I would have liked to see him get back into Sean Payton's offense.
Yeah, the Seahawks wasted Jimmy Graham.
They didn't use him like Payton used him. And, you know, if you line him up as a typical tight end, he's not going to do that much good for you.
Yeah, it's almost like they didn't know what they had. Like, were they not paying attention?
I don't know, because if for the longest time it was Gronk and Graham. And then when Graham goes to Seattle, I mean, all of the Saints fans are like, oh, crud. But he never materialized.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, you see a guy leave your team. I don't know what was sadder, Jimmy Graham leaving New Orleans or the Seahawks wasting Jimmy Graham once he got to Seattle. Jason is in Roseburg. Jason, appreciate the call. What do you have?
I don't know if you guys have discussed this yet. I'm a diehard Raider fan. The day that Bo Jackson got hurt in the playoff game against the Bengals was devastating for me.
We talked about that. And you remember when he came back in baseball? He was limping around and just was never quite the same.
Never the same. And the Raiders, I mean, that was, you know, a window in which we had him and Marcus Allen where we were on our way, and it just never happened again.
Bo Jackson said that in an interview just last year that he would not let his kids play football. He said he'd let them play anything but football. He said, you know, and remember Nike in the Bo Knows campaign. I mean, Bo was like that centerpiece. There's nobody like Bo. You know, he's the only person still in history to be selected as a Major League Baseball All-Star and an NFL Pro Bowler. Only player in history. He said that the game's gotten so violent that, you know, the education is caught up to the violence. He said, I'd tell him to play baseball, basketball, soccer, anything but football. Man, he has no regrets, though. I do, for him. Chris is in Tualatin. Chris, give us the sadness.
Oh, I would have to say, John, it would be the morning that I woke up, opened the sports page, and saw that Brandon Roy had medically retired.
Yeah. He meant a lot.
That was a tough one.
Why was that so hard?
This was coming off of, if memory serves, that Dallas series, including the Game 4, which I was in attendance when he scored 18 points in the fourth quarter. And so he had that blaze of glory, and I'm thinking, surely this is a sign he's got a little bit more in the tank, and then next fall, no, he's done, he's gone.
Yeah, it was a remarkable thing to see him in that Dallas series because, you know, all of a sudden he was back, right? And all of a sudden, it's funny to me that you bring this up, Chris, because when I was thinking about sad moments, there was a Blazer game a couple of years ago where Roy was reluctant to come back and be like part of the organization. It's just his personality. He's not a guy who's going to come back and a guy who's going to, take the victory lap. He's always had a hard time with that. But he came back and he sat with his wife courtside at a Blazer game. I happened to be there that night because it was date night in our household and my wife wanted to go to the Blazer game. And I looked down and I said, Brandon Roy is sitting courtside. And I was sitting there in a kind of a sobering moment thinking about all of those great moments that Brandon Roy gave. He represented both the hope of an organization and also the fleeting window of opportunity that you see in sports, because it was so short that Brandon Roy played, then came back, and then was out, and then, you know, really wasn't ever the same. But what got me that night was they announced, hey, we're recognizing Brandon Roy. They put him up on the big screen. And he kind of gave this sheepish kind of wave to the crowd where he kind of stood and waved. And I got glassy eyes. And I didn't get glassy eyes for me. I got glassy eyes because of what he represented to the people in Portland and the fans, the Blazer fans, who had lived and died with him through so much. Because he really represented the first of the good guy era of Blazers basketball after, you know, it was after Rashid. He was the guy when Zach Randolph in the locker room was talking nonsense as a rookie. Roy said, hey, enough. It's not what we're about. And then some great memories.
Brandon's open three-pointer near side. Ring it up. Roy dribbling left, pulls up with an elbow jumper right through. He hits the first of his attempts on this evening. Roy hits the first of two. Roy hits a pair. Brandon with eight. Brandon drives into a crowd. Down the lane. Put it in and it's fouled. And Roy converts. He's 4-4 from the line. Roy against Hill. A left elbow pull-up right through. 13 points. Roy takes the jumper over Barnes and Camden. Roy Brandon is just in another zone right now. 15 points. Roy streaking in on Nash, and he lays it in. Roy with 17. Brandon dunks it. Roy hit the first free throw. Roy hits another free throw. Roy hits a pair. Now he's back at the line for two more. Roy hits a pair. Now to Roy. Three-pointer out of the key. Count it. Roy up to 28 points now. Roy, left baseline, lean-in shot. Got another one. Boy, Brandon Roy right now is in another zone. It's his fourth 30-point game in the last five outings. Three-pointer under duress, and he hit it. Oh, the natural reigns in a three with two hands in his face. Brandon to the hoop, lays it in, and it's fouled. Brandon, do it. Do it. Do it till you're satisfied. And Roy connects on the three-point play. 36-point crowd chanting MVP, and why not? Roy connects on a pair. 38 points. He hits the first free throw. 40 points with the second. Pulls up a three-pointer. Got it. The natural with 43. That one also good. How about 45 points for Roy? A pull-up jumper. Got it. The natural with 47. To Roy. Three-pointer for the lead. Yeah! They're dancing in the aisles here at the Rose Garden. And Roy's first foul shot is perfect. And he hits a pair. Timeout.
There it is. Brandon Roy. Look, I remember that night when he came back to the arena. Again, I had glassy eyes and I was like, man, why do I have glassy eyes? I turned to my wife and I said, I'm not sad for me. I'm not sad for him. I was thinking about all those Blazer fans who were in then what was the Rose Garden Arena. And he had sort of ushered this era of Blazers basketball that had so much disappointment around it. It was Greg Oden, sure. But it also was, you know, that era of Blazers basketball with Brandon Roy and LaMarcus Aldridge and Travis Outlaw and Martell Webster, the franchise was trying to find its way, was trying so hard, and it had hitched its wagon to Roy, and he just physically didn't have it anymore. He didn't. Man, sad sports moment. Thank you guys all for sharing those. I really appreciate everybody who called in, everybody who tweeted at me. Too many tweets to read, but I appreciate you sharing those. I'll take a look at those coming up. Also, I want you to subscribe to the podcast on SoundCloud and iTunes, and make sure you give John's Waterproofing your attention. John's Waterproofing at bettercrawlspaces.com. I mentioned them earlier in the show. If you've got an investment or rental property or a house, John's Waterproofing, they can do it for you. Bettercrawlspaces.com.